Our show is largely entertainment and pop culture focused. One of the many reasons we do that, we know that the time of night that we're on, and this was the case when we were doing overnights for the 27 years we did that full time, we know that there are a lot of people listening to us at this time of night who may be by themselves, and they need some company, and they need a few reasons to smile. That's one of the reasons we intentionally focus our show on entertainment and pop culture. And of course, if there is anything major going on, you will hear about it right here.
If you know us, you know that's a fact. Whatever's happening, we're ready to cover it. But we like to think of the show as, I said from day one, 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years now, when we do the show, you're coming to the house. We're going to pour you something to drink. You're going to sit back, put up your feet. We're going to talk a little bit. Of course, we're doing all the talking, I guess. Play a little music. And as many listeners have said over the past few months, it's like a safe haven just to come and just know if something happens, you're going to get it. But meantime, you can just chill out for a little bit.
Having said that, there are times when we need to address the obvious. So just a few thoughts. Whatever your feelings are about what has been going on in the Chicagoland arena for too long, contact your legislator, your representatives, contact the governor, make them aware of your feelings. It does matter. It really, really does. And it's easy enough to find the information for where you contact your local representative and then certainly the governor. Also, and I have to echo something that Governor Pritzker said here, if you see something going on, take a video. Post it. Keep yourself safe. Do not put yourself in any kind of a harmful situation. But if you're in a position to take video, post it, get it to the media. All of those things matter too. And one other thing, and Johnny and I have done this, and we are advising our friends to do this. You're our friends. So we're advising you. If you have a passport, get a passport ID card.
Right.
They're about the size of a driver's license. Keep it with you. They will serve as an identification if, heaven forbid, you're in a situation where you need to show that you have a valid passport.
Right. So if you're stopped, and it's the size of your driver's license, you're going to have your license with you or a credit card, so it's not going to take up any room. And it really doesn't cost that much. If you go to travel.state.gov, you can get all the details on how to get your passport card. I'm surprised at the number of people we know that didn't even know passport cards exist.
Yeah.
And you can fly with your passport card as well, so that you're not carrying your book around with you everywhere. But if you are so inclined to get a card, a passport card, you can apply for a passport card by mail as a renewal, even if it is your first passport card. You can also do the same and apply for your first passport book by mail as a renewal if you already have a passport card. So if you have the card and not the book, you can get the book. And if you have the book and you want the card, as a renewal, it's $30. And we did this when we renewed our passports months ago, and at that time said, well, you know what, just in case we have to hop on a plane, we'll take our passport cards with us all the time, just have that little extra bit of identification. And more we feel very strongly that you may need that extra piece of identification.
Hopefully you don't find yourself in a position other than getting on an airplane where you need that, but if you do, it's an easy way to prove, you are a valid U.S. citizen.
Right.
And we have a link. We're going to post that on the Steve and Johnny Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show. We'll do that over the next couple of minutes. And what a week.
Mm, yeah. So things continue to happen tonight, as you heard Ron reporting in the news coming out of Broadview. So we will certainly have that information as the night goes on. For the listener who texted and said, what, you fired? No, that was sent before we even proceeded to talk about just kind of saying, hey, we know what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
And I hate driving in on Saturday night as I'm taking pictures and posting pictures of the city, and people are saying, oh my God, what a beautiful city.
Yeah.
Thinking as we're driving in, yeah, it really is. And
candidly, this was one of those nights where Johnny and I had the discussion about, are we going to come in tonight?
Yeah.
Because we don't know what the situation is. And yeah. We talk about this with Julian all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, we didn't encounter anything, but it's out there.
Yeah.
And of course, it's on our minds and your minds. So if there's anything you need to know about, you will hear it right here.
Yep. Yeah. We got a lot going on tonight. I promise you, so if you will stick around, the one and only, the world-renowned Tommy Emmanuel is going to join us in a bit, and we're going to talk about the fact that he is coming to the Chicago area. He's going to be up in Evanston on the 15th of October.
October 4th, 10-4, good buddy.
Yep.
C.W. McCall, he actually had some other country records,
did he?
I think. Yeah.
Well, whatever happened to C.W.?
C.W. was,
he wasn't the dude from Mannheim Steamroller. Was that just myth?
Myth.
Was it myth? Okay.
But
Keeper of the Big Plug, Bob, is in here. He knows stuff. So it's myth. I've been carrying that around with me all these years. So Bob,
I forgot the difference between the version we played, which was the one that was played on all the radio stations,
yeah,
and the version that is the soundtrack for the movie.
Oh.
Which gets a little more
really?
Risky. Yeah,
oh.
it's kind of fun.
Okay.
You might want to listen to that.
Bob, did you have a CB in
no.
your car? You, why do you say it like that?
What?
No. Are you kidding? Ron, did you have a CB?
I did not, but my cousin did in Kentucky when I would go to visit there. I just thought it was the greatest thing ever.
Oh, we loved it. We traveled for years back and forth to Florida with our handheld CB radio. Didn't need to have the whip antenna so people didn't know you were listening, which was even better.
Mm-hmm. Have I told you my seat cover story?
Oh, stop it.
What's the seat cover story?
So,
I am the seat cover,
this
right?
is back in the day when we were doing the all-night show, five nights a week. We would leave the Tribune Tower parking lot at about a quarter after five and pull into our carport in Panama City Beach, roughly 16 hours later. So we take off. We're heading down I-65. And Johnny's got the CB up. And we're just kind of monitoring what's going on with the truckers.
Mm-hmm.
And we pass this one truck. And we hear him say, Breaker 19, see that silver Cadillac? Take a look at the seat cover there. Boy, I bet she's high maintenance.
They actually suggested I was high maintenance.
Oh, you're the seat cover.
I was the seat cover. And so so now these two guys start talking back and forth about how I must be so expensive, and that poor fool driving the car must work two jobs to keep me happy. And I'm like...
And Johnny wouldn't do what I wanted her to do. I wanted her to key RCB and say... I may be high maintenance, but I'm worth it.
But I was holding it in my hand, looking at it, going, no, just because I have my hair in a bun doesn't mean I go to the beauty shop and I'm talking to the CB, but I don't have it keyed. And they went on for the longest time. I said, please, hit the gas and let's get out of here.
I think I believe it was south of Indianapolis.
It was north of Indianapolis.
Was it north of Indianapolis? I know it was around Naptown.
We were getting into more truck traffic, and the CB... It saved us so times. We'd be driving along, and we would hear truckers going northbound saying, hey, everybody up ahead, road's closed or whatever, and we would just follow all the 18-wheelers off the road.
Well, one of the worst was we were coming back from Florida, and we literally had just crossed from Kentucky into Indiana, and all of a sudden we start hearing the CB, the truckers are saying, get off on the frontage road. And we see all the truckers are doing that, so we follow them. roughly from just north of the state line to a little bit south of
Lafayette?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was nothing but a backup.
So we drove the frontage road with all the truckers the whole way. And I'm just holding my CB radio going, thank you, thank you. Because we were driving straight to the radio station to do a show that night. So we needed to be able to get here.
Yep.
After leaving at 6 o'clock in the morning.
So you were basically in a convoy.
We were, yes.
Yeah, good buddy.
Really?
And remember, it got to the point where you were not supposed to say good buddy. Because
that's
it was like code.
Yeah.
You're like, ooh, don't go there. And nowadays, I fired it up and you don't hear anything because they have their own channels.
Yeah, they've gone to a different channel. I forget what the channel is, but...
That was fun. And you used to live pretty close to a truck stop.
I used to live in Calumet City, just off 159th, an area called Village Green. And there was a truck stop literally right as you get off on 159th. And they had some ladies of the evening that would be... plying their wares, and I would hear some of the conversations because they would have their CBs too because they wanted to communicate with them truckers. And I heard some interesting conversations.
And I'm sure there was a high-maintenance woman or two there, too.
I think there probably was, yes.
Yes. So Ron survived today's game.
What the heck happened?
We've talked about it. It was pitching.
It was a bad first inning, but after that, first inning,
not really.
They scored 6 runs in the first inning and three runs after that. So the score looks lopsided, 9-3. But you take away those 6 runs from Matthew Boyd.
They would have been tied.
Okay.
I know baseball doesn't allow you to do that, but I'm saying without those 6 runs in the first inning, it's a tied ball game. So it was a close game except for Matthew Boyd, who had a really bad first inning. Is that rationalization or is that rationalization?
I love you because when you told me that, I was standing in the newsroom and with a straight face, you said, really, it was just, they were tied at 3.
You said it just as if you believed it, Ron.
It's true. It's true. So I'm okay with, they were going to lose a game, so now they've done that.
Get it out of your system.
And now they can move on and take game 2, and that's Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But see, what scares me is this is on the heels of that nail biter on Friday.
Oh, wasn't that something? Yeah, Thursday.
Was it Thursday? Yeah. That was just
too dramatic. Dramatic.
You said that Matthew Boyd had 3 days off.
Yes.
Right? So that's not really an excuse because the Brewers were off many days, weren't they, coming into this game?
But Boyd needed another day off for his what he's usually used to as far as rest. So he didn't get enough rest. The Brewers had, a lot of rest.
Yeah. They had a week.
Yeah. They had a lot, and they were ready to go. They were ready to play. I mean, they won the game. You got to tip your hats to them. We didn't think we were going to sweep the Brewers.
Mm-mm.
So it's a 5-game series. The first game is just the first game. So,
let me write that down. The first game is just the first game.
You play them one at a time.
Okay. And this first game was actually a tie. Let's just remember that.
Without the first inning.
Without the first inning, it was a tie.
If you just ignore that.
All right, Bob, were you happy that you didn't have to go up there today to do your engineer magic?
Yeah, I was. I mean, it was still my database, but yeah, I was fine.
Yeah. Now, are you working Monday's game?
Yes.
You are.
Yeah.
Will you go up on Sunday to get there?
No. I have to work.
You're working on Sunday here, and then you're going up there on Monday.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Well, I hope it's fun.
And then, depending on whether they agree or not, Tuesday I would be going to Wrigley Field to do the scans for Wednesday's game.
Oh.
The Cubs have reached out.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's our engineer is sought after. Yes. Rock stars and sports teams. Well, helps if you turn on your mic.
It makes a whole lot of difference if I turn on my mic. Also, since it is October, tonight we will start each show. We're going to do a spooky story.
Yes.
And for those of you, some people will know this story. Later tonight, we're going to play from the Arch Obler collection, The Dark.
Yes.
Let's turn our attention to Taylor Swift, along with Sabrina Carpenter, the title track from Life of a Showgirl. I listened to the whole album. I really like it.
It sounds like her voice is in a different register.
Well, interesting you should say that, because one of the things that I came away from listening to the album, I want to hear her do some things in her lower register.
Lower range, yeah.
Because she's developing a good lower range.
Good,
and I
strong.
Know her, the lion's share of her fans are used to her singing in a high register, but she's got a good low register too, and I'd like to hear more of it.
So Target's opened, hundreds of them opened at midnight last night so people could grab their copy. What you just heard made history in the last 24 hours. It made history.
No surprise, it's Taylor Swift.
Life of a Showgirl broke records on all of the streaming platforms. Amazon Music said it broke the record that she'd previously set with her 2024 album, The Tortured Poets Department. On October 3rd, The Life of a Showgirl became the most streamed album of all time in its first day on Amazon Music. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And if she tours, and she probably will, are we going to all dress up as showgirls to go to the concert?
Well,
we're in our showgirl era. I'm 8, but look at me wearing my fishnets in my showgirl era.
And she is doing, she has already recorded, the guy we watched from Great Britain.
Graham Norton.
Graham Norton. She's already done the Graham Norton show. We'll probably see that in this country in a couple weeks. And she is scheduled to do Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers. Seth Meyers, I believe she's going to be his only guest.
Of course.
For the whole show.
If you get her in there, you lock the door.
Yeah.
Oh, golly.
Good for her. Well, we've been fans since her very first song. Have I loved everything she's done?
No.
No. Do I really like everything she does? Pretty much.
What about the song that she wrote specifically for Travis Kelce? I've only heard about the song. I haven't heard the song.
Oh, are you talking about Wood?
Oh, that's it. Okay. So, fans, but looking over my shoulder, not so much, right, Julian?
Oh, come you
on.
Said it.
Come on. Not so much.
No, I just, no, I don't know. I've never, I mean, she's talented. I'll give her that. Yes. But.
You don't get it.
I don't get the devotion, the obsession, the cult-like tendencies.
My answer for that, just my perspective, I don't know how much of that has to do with the music. Certainly a fair amount of it. But she, from day one, knew how to use social media. Her career made on social media, and she is always in touch with her fans and posting all kinds of things. And I think that has a lot to do with her success and her devoted fans.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. When you were 16, Julian, was there any musical person that you... not to the extent of Swifties, but that you were just really obsessed with?
No, I've never worshipped, you know, entities.
And you love music.
Or, yeah. I love music, and I love music equally as, you know, there's good music, there's bad music, but there's no one...
person or...
Yeah, no one person that I'm just fawning over. I have to follow them. Let me follow their tour, you know, grab every little thing that comes off the stage.
We had a friend, in fact, he was our unofficial photographer for the show, Anthony, and I think he saw Fish 50, 60 times.
Oh, yeah. Anthony Urias, who did those of you who have our Life After Dark CD, Anthony did the wonderful cover on that CD. Yeah, he was a Fish fanatic.
And still is.
Yeah.
And when I first learned that, I said, well, you know, I should give them a listen. And I went, wow. Okay. Obviously, a lot of people get it. I'm not getting
it. And if you like Grateful Dead, you're probably going to like Fish.
And you know what? I feel like Julian, as he speaks about this, about Taylor Swift, when I think about the Grateful Dead, I'm like, okay, I kind of get it. I can't imagine getting in a van and traveling around the country and just to follow the music. Couldn't understand it then. They're okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't really grasp it. And Bob, I have to ask you, you're in studio. Was there anybody that you were chess obsessed with?
Okay, when you were 16, what were you listening to? What year would that have been?
16.
Were you listening to sports more than music?
It was more sports, really. Yeah. You know.
Look at the disdain in his face. That's disdain. He's like, ew.
Yeah,
no, I just smelled something bad. By the way, on the subject of things, it
smells like something. Yes. What? Where are we going with this?
Wait, you just mentioned me, and now you're talking about smelling bad. Wait,
I'm going to follow that with a comment about skunks. We encountered so many active skunks on the way to work tonight, and we're driving through a metropolitan area. I'm like, another one. Oh, another one. I mean, Whacker.
Just as we turn off on Grand and we're coming across the bridge, there is a skunk that I think he lives there because it's the same place we get it every week.
Yes. And that's not a statement about anyone who happens to be living down
absolutely.
There.
I mean, this is a legitimate skunk
smell.
Yeah.
Which there are people. We used to have a listener who would call in. She loved the smell of skunks. It was one of those things that we all went, okay.
Sounds like Ashley. Ashley said the same thing. She loves the smell of
Ashley?
Ashley?
WGN's Ashley?
Yeah, Landecker said the same thing. What?
Okay.
Yeah. Wet grass is my favorite smell. After it rains.
And what's the word?
Petrichor. Yes.
Yeah.
I love
that smell.
That's a great word, too, petrichor. P-E-T-R-I.
That'd be a good group name.
C-H-O-R, right? Petrichor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But petrichor would have to do what? New Age jazz?
Yes. Wet grass. Whatever conjures up wet grass.
Man, wow,
not that kind of grass. Yeah. No. You don't want that wet.
This year is the 75th anniversary of Chess Records. Everybody thinks of Chess. They think of Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, a whole bunch of things.
Rolling Stones history.
Gene Ammons, My Foolish Heart, was Chess Records' first hit record.
Really? So they transitioned. They realized there was money to be made when.
Well, but they always had one foot in jazz.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, I believe the label was, because they had Chess, Checker, Argo, which was their more jazz label, and then something called Cadet Concept. And they always had one foot, they were always involved with roots music.
Yeah.
And they love jazz. Yeah.
Interesting. Keeper of the Big Plug, Bob, is in here. With your history as an engineer, did you ever work at any of the recording studios in town?
No.
Because we had so many of them. A lot of people don't realize that this was a hopping place to be.
At one point, this was a real recording center. In fact, a lot of the hits that came out of the 50s and 60s were recorded in Chicago. A lot of people don't know. A ton of Pat Boone's hits were recorded right here in Chicago. There was most of the hits that Mercury did were recorded in either United or RCA Studios. And
was Wooden Nickel also a recording studio or just a label?
I think they had their own recording studio for a while.
Yeah, kind of like Alligator.
But Chess had their own studio, 2120 South Michigan Avenue.
It's a landmark now, isn't it?
Yeah.
If it's not, it should be.
In fact, that's when there was what was called Record Row on Michigan Avenue. You had Allstate Record Distributors. Then you had VJ Records, Chess Records, United. And I mean, literally, within about a four-block span.
That's crazy.
Has
anybody ever written a book about that part of the city's history? Because there's a book there.
Oh, there absolutely is a book there.
We did a lot of this research when we were working to bring the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to Chicago. And making our case, we pointed out all of the music that was, in fact, recorded here.
Yeah.
But just a little sidebar, that was all affixed from the get-go. Yeah. They just wasted everybody's time in every city but Cleveland.
We were part of Mayor Harold Washington's committee to bring the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to the city of Chicago.
With Jerry Butler.
With Jerry Butler, the Iceman. And at the point, after we had been working for about a year, we had literally $40 million lined up. And it was going to be at Navy Pier with a working recording studio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the time we found out, this has all been just a publicity thing.
It was a publicity
thing. They intended to put it in Cleveland all along.
Yeah, Jan Werner knew that he was going to go to Cleveland all along, but it was just constant publicity. And we bit. We were foolish. And a lot of work went into not only doing the research, but getting petitions signed. We would go to concerts and stand outside.
Star Plaza Theater.
Yes, we would stand outside of the Rosemont and ask people if they would sign to get the Rock and Roll Hall
and
of Fame
we had,
here.
You know, somewhere in our files, I think we still have a list and some of the stuff that we put together for that. We should that should be a little part of our
And Mayor Washington was gung-ho. He was
boy,
like,
he was wonderful.
At that time, we didn't have Navy Pier the way it is now.
Right.
It was somewhat of an eyesore.
And they wanted to rebuild Navy Pier, and this was just a proposal that they thought, heck yeah.
Yeah. Is Navy Pier the number one attraction in the state at this point?
I believe it is.
I'm looking at Bob. Bob, come on. You got to know something tonight. Bring something. You don't know anything about skunks or Taylor Swift?
Nope. Sorry.
And the one thing he did know about, we can't say on the air.
That's right.
Interesting conversation about the radio.
Yeah, I brought something to the table.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
We just can't we can't unveil it.
It's just that I'm busting now to share it with everybody.
Yeah, but
No. Listeners, that My Foolish Heart sounded like Ben Webster. Do you know the name Ben Webster?
I know the name Ben Webster. Yeah, I think Ammon's probably influenced.
Whatever happened to him?
That's a good question. He had a fair amount of success.
Did he really? I'm sorry. That's the first time I've heard his name or My Foolish Heart by him. And it was beautiful.
It's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, that defines late night jazz.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Just, but again, they were so in touch, the Chess Brothers, the Ramsey Lewis, London House albums. Mm-hmm. That was all. I mean, they paid attention to what was going on at some of the clubs.
You know, we should talk to off the air, maybe put a bug in his ear, because honestly, writing a book about the recording history in this city should be done. It's just I'm not interested in doing it. We should talk to Carrie Baker, because Carrie Baker, who did the busking book, I mean, he is very much in tune, even though he's living out in Palm Springs now. He's very much in tune, having grown up here, being connected through record companies as a producer, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to text him tonight and say, write that book.
Get on.
It needs to be written.
Just get on it. We have a ton of things coming up tonight. As we mentioned, a little later we'll have one of our Arch Obler scary stories for the month of October. And a little later, we're going to be talking with Tommy Emmanuel. He has a brand new album out. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It is so good. And I'm not saying that just because it's Tommy, but it's really, really good, which
and
is no surprise.
Space is bringing him to Khan Auditorium, which is so smart on their part because he will fill that place. I've been to one concert at Khan, and it was many, many years ago.
Who was it?
I don't remember.
Okay.
It was the 70s, Steve. That's why I don't remember. But I do remember it being a lovely venue. And
I don't think I've ever been there.
You have not been there. No. It's north side, far north side.
Yeah, well.
Bob, did you ever work Khan Auditorium?
No.
No?
No.
Because I remember the acoustics were really good. And anyway, wherever you can see Tommy is a treat. And we're going to talk to him right here on WGN.
Yeah, love that. That is Tommy Emmanuel, Scarlet's World, a song that he premiered on our show the last time he was in the studio with us, and it is now on his new album, Living in the Light, and Tommy is on the radio with us. Hey, Tommy.
Hi, Tommy.
Hey. Hello, kids. How you doing?
We're doing great. Congratulations on your new CD.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it drops next week, and it's already kind of off to a better start than most things I've done. So I'm really, really thrilled. We released Scarlet's World a couple of weeks ago as a kind of first song off the album. And the video in the first week did like 28,000 views.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And the next week, we released Black and White to Color, which is the very latest one.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2 days, it was 94,000.
Mm, that's wonderful.
So we knew something was up.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, your timing. You waited just long enough after Taylor dropped her album to release yours.
How about that?
Right?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's no competition there, I'm afraid. I don't mess with... steamroll is that big.
Yeah, well, I think I read somewhere where you actually listened to her last album in its entirety, and you came
over
away a fan, right?
And the very latest one. That's all I've listened to. Is
really? Really?
Oh, absolutely. Oh. It's very different
from
her other stuff, and I like it. But, well, yeah, I mean, I like most of her stuff. I like it all, and mm-hmm. and I try to learn from it. You know, you've got to look at someone who's making billions of lives better by whatever they do. You got to look at someone like that and say, what can I learn?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what can I learn from that?
What did you learn from listening to Taylor Swift's new album? What did you take from that?
How important the song structure that you know this is where the chorus is coming, and it's like a security blanket or something. And it's not that it's predictable; it's just that you need it to do that. And and then we want to hear what's coming a little bit later that could be a surprise. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I use these ideas in my songs, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
you've
because
always...
surprises for the listener are so important.
And you've always told us that even though the lion's share of your songs are instrumental, you've always told us that you approach it like a vocal, so this instrumental has
Absolutely.
A story to tell.
Yes, exactly. I was explaining this to a room full of songwriters and guitar players a couple of weeks ago, and the truth is that if you boil it down, I don't think like a guitar player. When I'm writing a song, I'm actually automatically writing for a singer in a band, and for I want to get this song on radio.
Hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that's how I'm thinking. I'm thinking like the boring old guy in the record company who said, over, give us something we can get on radio.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking like the boring old guy from the publishing company, you know, mate, don't bore us, get to the chorus. you know what I mean? And then I'm thinking like the boring old record producer. You've got to put it needs a bridge, blah, 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 you know, and mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff. I'm wearing all those hats. while constructing a song for a singer in a band. I never think, I better write another song that I can play on stage,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You don't read music, right?
Exactly. I wish I could.
So when you write a song, do you write anything down, or as you're writing is it all in your memory?
No. It's all internalized as I'm going.
Wow.
I'm the tape machine. I'm the recorder. So I'm playing it, and then I'll go, okay, that part there could be a little different, mm-hmm. and then I'll play it again. It's like I rewound the tape, started from the same spot and go again.
That's amazing.
When I get to, well, my studio is my iPhone, you know.
Right.
I write using my iPhone. And what I do is when I get to where I think I've got the song, you know, 80% there, I'll record it on voice memos,
mm-hmm.
and then put the guitar down and have a listen. I'll be the listener.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a chance for your instincts to tell you what's right, what's capable, what should be different. You know, your expectations and your instincts work for you with the listener, you know?
How important is muscle memory? And the reason I'm asking this is that recently I picked up a guitar and I wanted to play a song and I forgot how it goes. And my hand went to the first chord, and after I went to the first chord, my fingers knew where to go. It was all muscle memory.
How important is that to you? It's really important.
Hmm.
And it's really important every now and again to go to visit those songs that you don't play very much and just start from the top and see what your hands do.
Hmm.
You know, it's really important. I know I've wore a bit of egg on stage a few times by, you know, being a braggart saying, you know, tell me what you want to hear. And someone will say, blah, blah, blah song from, you know, 10 albums ago. And I'll go, no problem. And then I'll go into it and I realize, shit, I don't know the bridge. You know, and so I have to go back and play after the chorus. I have to play another verse till my brain starts to figure out how to get to the bridge. So, you know, things like that can be avoided. A, if you're not a braggart, and B, if you take time to just go over some of your older stuff. You know,
we were in a small club called Martyrs, mm-hmm. on the north side of Chicago. You were on stage.
Yeah.
You had played for a couple of hours, and then you said, what do you want to hear? And some mope in the audience yelled, Zeppelin! And you didn't miss a beat. You went right into Zeppelin. And everyone went, yes! Yay!
Because
he was going to, he thought, I'll trip up this guitarist. He won't know Zeppelin. And then, of course, the audience turned on the guy in the audience. So that was a great moment.
Yeah.
We're talking.
Well, there's been a few of those kind of where someone will sing out, Freebird!
Yes, yes.
You know, what I do in those situations, because, I've heard the song Freebird. We all have.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no desire to make an instrumental out of it. So what I do is, in a situation like that, I just jam on three chords, like some guy sitting around the campfire after he's smoked something illegal, and just kind of jam on three chords, and they go, yeah! They think it's Freebird, you know? It's just three chords.
Not only do I love Black and White to Color from his new album, Living in the Light, but the video is pretty cool, too.
Who is that funky guy?
Yes!
Well, you know, I was always inspired to write something that did what the movie The Wizard of Oz did. You know, it's going along in black and white, and this is life. And all of a sudden, it goes to color,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so when John Knowles and I were working out arrangements for some Christmas songs many years ago, I came up with this idea at the end of "I'll Be Home for Christmas," and the song started in one key, did a key change, and then ended in a different key, like a real surprise at the end. Mm-hmm. And the very first time I played it for him, when I did that, he looked up at me and he said, oh, black and white to color.
Oh.
And it was just such a beautiful thing to say. Oh. And I thought, okay, I got to write that, you know.
Yeah.
So the middle, you know where it goes into that kind of funny chord,
mm-hmm.
that's like, ooh, things are spinning around and all that. But then, you know, the music where it does the breakdown bit when it's gone to color is very African. And And I know that for a fact because one of my neighbors who lives down the street, she's from Rwanda, and she loves music. And if I'm sitting on the veranda playing my guitar, she'll come up and she'll do a little dance to what I'm playing. And
I love that.
You know, and she, she's a great lady. Anyway, when I wrote this song, when I wrote Black and White to Color, I couldn't wait to play it to her. And so I went and invited her up for a cup of tea and a biscuit, and she came up, and I said, "Can I play you my new song?" And she said, "Oh, yes, please." So I played it, and then when I finished, she looked at me and she said, "You've heard African folk music." And I said, "You're right, I have." She said, "Yeah, the middle section sounds just like African folk music."
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah.
You know, wow. We travel, we listen, we learn, and somehow it ends up years later. You know, when I went to Africa, it was 1999, and I wrote Mombasa, Haba na Haba, you know, Little by Little, and all that stuff, Song for Nature, and then now Black and White to Color. It's just, it's amazing what happens to us when we experience other people's, you know, culture and other people's music. Because African music, to me, it's as simple as it is complicated
in
some areas, you know?
Yes.
And so when you hear that, it's repetitive, but it's like, it goes around once, and your immediate instinct is, "Oh, please go around again. I got to hear it one more time." You know?
Yes,
and it's hypnotic, you know.
So anyway,
go ahead.
Now, isn't that one of the unique benefits to your touring? Not only are you bringing your music to various parts of the globe, but you are taking something with you from every part of the globe that you visit.
I certainly try, and I try to be aware of what I can learn from other people's music. You know, I've stolen so much. You know, from people like you know, when I did a fundraiser for the Navajo Nation and in Lehigh in Utah, and the chief came down and stood beside me and played the flute. And I tried to remember everything he did. And then when I wrote the song, The Trails, I did his flute part as close to what I could remember on the guitar. And now it's one of my sounds that I don't hear anywhere else.
You are a human sponge. I'm sitting here smiling because you're just sucking it all up every place you go.
Well, as dear old Chet Atkins would say, that's petty theft.
Yeah. Yes.
Speaking of Chet Atkins, we're going to talk more about your album, but I want to focus for a second. Sunday, you are doing something so cool. Our friends at WSM are celebrating their 100th anniversary, and you are going to be in the Opry tomorrow, Sunday afternoon,
a
right?
A rare Sunday Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And my part of the show is a tribute to Chet.
Oh, sweet. Now, when you do something like that, you know what your time limitations are. Do you step on stage knowing exactly where you're going to go, song, or do you just...
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Well, when you've only got three songs, you've only got a short time, you got to, first of all, you got to have fun, but you got to have the biggest impact you can, and it's got to be fulfilling for everybody. So, you know, here's my plan. Shall I tell you now?
Please, yes.
Please, yes.
Yes. All right. Okay, I'm going to come straight out and play Black and White to Color with all my heart.
Yes.
And then I'm going to talk about when I was little and that I turned on the radio and I heard Chet Atkins and what it did to me and how it impacted my whole life. From a seven-year-old, now 70, he's still impacting me. He's still teaching me, and I still draw on all the things that I stole from him, you know, that I learned and all that. So I will now play the song that changed my life. So I play Windy and Warm.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Good.
And then I talk about the fact that he rang me and asked me if I'd like to record. We recorded. Then he got a bad cancer. And we decided to record and try and finish. And we did. And the last song that he ever recorded was a song with me. And it was called Smoky Mountain Lullaby. Mm-hmm. And it was not only a beautiful performance, and it was one take. It was an amazing experience. It was my first Grammy nomination. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so much amazing stuff happened. And then I'll play the song as a solo piece for the audience, which he wrote.
Mm. Mm. And people can check out the Opry, WSM Radio. You can hear it online all over the planet.
Right, it's going to be streaming tomorrow afternoon. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
We do want to mention, because a lot of people are saying, I'm so excited because I already have tickets for Khan Auditorium in Evanston. Lovely venue for you. It's a perfect place.
That's coming up soon.
Yes, on the 15th. Limited seats available, but the people who are texting in tonight are going, ha-ha, I got my tickets already. Yeah, we're real excited.
Nice.
Yeah,
I'm excited too.
The blatant plug light went on, so people can find out everything about your album. Go to TommyEmmanuel.com, and that's where people can pre-order your album, right?
Exactly.
Yes. Not.
And, I think there's two tracks on Spotify right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's Tommy Emmanuel, not Tommy Enamelhead. I've always loved
Tony Enamel.
Yes.
Yeah.
What something different from Tommy from his new album Living in the Light is Maxine.
It's a good song. It's written by a dear friend of mine, and it's a lady from New Zealand, and she lives in Australia. I work with her and produced a couple of hit records for her. Back in the 80s when I was a producer for CBS Records. And her name is Sharon O'Neill, and she wrote that song, A True Story, about a friend of hers who became a lady of the night, and she ended up dying. But it was kind of her story, you know. And and I've always loved the song. And it was never, ever played really outside of Australia and New Zealand. And I thought, you know, I'm going to give that a go because I think Americans will love this song. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like it's a pop song, but it's R&B, and it's got an interesting approach to it. And I loved the construction of the backing vocals. Mm-hmm. On Sharon's original version, she had Arnold McCullough and the other guy with the blonde hair who sing with James Taylor on a lot of James's records.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so I recreated their backing vocal parts with a lady named Crystal who sings backing vocals with Jelly Roll.
Mm-hmm.
And I got her to come in. I taught her the part, and we her and I multi-tracked our voices behind the lead vocal, and made a little, you know, group there. And I had a great time doing that track. And I overdubbed some real drums and hi-hats and things on it. We used a kind of drum loop, and then I put real stuff over it, played bass on it. Acoustic guitars and then the electric guitar for the solo and for all the other parts. And I just love that song.
Tommy, you said at the outset that you did this new album Living in the Light in 4 days. Did you do this? Did you do it in LA or did you stay close to home in Nashville?
I did it here in Nashville because I wanted to work with Vance Powell, who's his work with Chris Stapleton and Jack White and people like that. I mean, his the sounds he gets, his great engineering skills and everything. I just really wanted a chance to work with him. And you wouldn't believe it, but, you know, a year and a half ago, I had to try and book him. And in 2025, I could only get him for 4 days.
Wow.
How in demand he is. So, yeah. So I recorded the whole album, finished and mixed, in 4 days.
Well, I have to ask, you may have recorded it in 4 days, but how long did it take for the concept of the album and for you to decide on all the songs? How long from start to finish was it? Because I love the variety of wonderful things are on this album.
Yeah, and I hope people will like it too. It was just like I had done Accomplice 1, Accomplice 2, you know, and a whole series of duets with other people. Mm-hmm. And it's been a long while since It's Never Too Late, you know, which was my last real solo album of mostly original songs. And so my manager, Brian, was telling me, it's time for us to do that, isn't it? You know, and I said, yeah. So last year when I wrote Scarlet's World, and I had other songs that I was working on, and then I got home last, when I broke my ribs last year, and I had to postpone 3 weeks of work while I came home and tried to recover. Mm-hmm. That's when I wrote Black and White to Color. Mm. And so while I was home here, you know, on pain medication, not being able to go anywhere with three broken ribs, I started writing all these tunes, you know, and that all came together. And then we were able to get Vance secured. So I knew for 4 days in whenever it was, March or April this year, already I can't remember. we've done so much, you know, but
yeah.
I knew I that was my deadline, you know. Mm-hmm. And the artwork and the photos and the idea for the album, everything happened because I got the idea for the title of the album when I was out doing a walk around Percy Priest Lake here in Nashville. I do sometimes a 3 mile walk around 6 a.m. and I meet my buddy Mad Dog McRae, and he's 75 and retired, and he loves doing a lot of walking. And so him and I met up. We hadn't seen each other in a while because I'd been on the road a lot. And when we finished the walk, he turned to me and he said, "Well, brother, you look so well. You must be living in the light."
Oh.
And it was just how he said it.
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, what did you just say?" He said, "You must be living in the light." I said, "That's it. That's what I got to do. That's the album. That's the title." It all just came to me.
That's wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you just mentioned duets. I have to tell you that if I am down, I look for videos of you and Billy Strings. The two of you together are absolutely magic.
Oh my God, he's incredible. Yeah.
But I just love your reaction too when he's in, and he's an interesting kid. He's so good, but together, God, you guys are just crazy good.
Yeah. I remember when I first saw Billy, it was at Merlefest, and Brian Sutton and I were playing together, and we were doing like a tribute to Doc Watson and Tony Rice, as you do at Merlefest, and Brian said, "You got to see this young fella, Billy." You know, he was about 16.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like a kind of surfy, hippie-looking guy, and he had his little guitar with him. And he said, "Can I play with you guys?" I said, "Yeah." And I got him up, and he just tore it up. I mean, he was just incredible. And Brian and I looked at each other like, "Holy smoke, look out!" You know.
That's a great story. Yeah.
And then about a year later, I'm playing at Grey Fox on the main stage, and I look over to the side, and there's Billy's with his guitar, just standing watching me. And so I got him out. That was the video of us playing Working Man Blues and guitar boogie and stuff. You know, that was not planned. He just showed up, and so I got him up, you know.
Is there anyone out there that you would love to play guitar with, just sit around and pick, or get on stage with, or get in a recording studio? Is there any one person that you think someday?
Oh, well, there's so many. There's so many good ones, you know. Well,
that's what they say about you. They're all saying, I just want to work with Tommy Emmanuel.
Yeah, he changed the oil and fixed the pressure in my tire.
Stop.
George Benson and I have been doing some demos and trying to get a project off the ground. But, you know, just getting the time to do that, I've had to keep going out to Arizona, where George lives, to work with him out there. And so we've done some demos, and we're still looking for some more songs, because at his stage, he's like, he could really do anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to get that finished for next year. There's a lot of surprise things going on. Oh. Like, for instance, you guys may not know this, but you know, Chet and George recorded a beautiful song together called Sunset, or Sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on Chet's album, Stay Tuned.
Yes.
It's the opening track. Beautiful track.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't stop there. There's three more songs.
Oh.
Featuring Chet and George, and I have them.
Ooh.
And, so I'm going to remaster them, and we're going to build this album around those tracks.
What a wonderful idea.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
So I think it would be great for people to hear something that they didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
A new version of Initiation that's called Initiation 25. And for those of you who are just being initiated into the world of Tommy Emmanuel, every single sound you hear is Tommy, one guy, one guitar. And I love the fact that you decided to redo it. And every time you do it, you bring something new to it. It's wonderful, Tommy.
Well, you know, I brought it back to kind of where it came from with this version. And I stopped playing it years ago because I played it so much and I thought, you know, I think it's time to do something else. And that's when I wrote the Native American style song called The Trails.
Mm-hmm.
And I played that for a while, you know. But what I did with it on that recording, it was one take. And when you see the video of this song, it's that take. The guys, the two guys with cameras, were in the room with me, and I had two small Uda Rosner amps on the floor, and I'm standing right above them, and I'm moving around, and I'm moving the delay from one amp to another. It's just a simple Boss delay pedal and two amps, slay one into the other, and then we just mic'd it. And we mic'd the room. We put mics all around the room. And then we just opened it all up. And I just played the song one time. And that's what you just heard.
Amazing.
It's wonderful, Tommy.
I always remember, Tommy, when we saw you in Elburn, Illinois, way back last century.
Yeah.
It was last century. And there was an 8-year-old girl sitting next to me. That was the old schoolhouse in Elburn, Illinois.
Yeah.
And this 8-year-old girl was wearing her Sunday best, and her grandmother had brought her to this concert. And she was sitting back in her seat. And when you started playing that, I'll never forget, she inched a little farther out. And by the time you were into the middle, the bridge of the song, she was leaning over the seat in front of her. I thought she was going to jump on stage. She was so mesmerized by that moment.
Wow.
And it was so cool to see your music affecting a child like that.
Wow. Well, that's a beautiful memory. I appreciate you sharing that with me. You know, it means so much when you see when people experience something that they're not ready for.
Yep.
But they're with you in that very moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's is that worth getting out of bed for? It's beautiful.
Amen.
By the way, I do have to share. We're talking about the number of hits on different videos. The last time you were in the studio with us, you did this wonderful Beatles medley, and I have to share, I just checked, the number of people that have looked at that video, it's up to 144,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And our producer, Julian, did a wonderful job of videoing you with the close-ups on your hands, and we've heard from so many people going, really? He's actually doing that? When you're listening on the radio, you're not convinced.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, you know, in the old days, when I was using my delay and I had like a little effects rack and an amp, and when I'd do initiation and when I'd play like Mombasa and I would play a drum solo, most people thought it was pre-recorded. Yep. And that I was using digital samples and all that. And you know, and even when I showed them, this is how I do it, I could tell they still didn't really believe
it. I know.
they thought there was a little tiny man in the box playing stuff.
Yeah.
Keep them wondering. Well, we're so excited for you, Tommy. You're in a great place. Tomorrow, Sunday, October 5th, you're going to be at the Grand Ole Opry for the big birthday, 100th birthday celebration. Then you're going to be also in Nashville. You're going to stay close to home, and you've got your guitar camp coming up. And you're going to be on stage on the 11th at the Ryman with a wonderful performer, John Pizzarelli, and then in Evanston, Illinois. Tommy, it's always a treat to check up both with you and to catch up.
Thanks.
And congrats.
Thank you both so much.
Again, we adore you, and we're so excited for the new album. So congratulations.
And we can't wait to get you in the studio here sometime.
Yeah.
We're overdue.
Yes, we are. Hey, take care of yourself. Feel great big hugs from Chicago, and we're looking forward to seeing you on the 15th.
Thanks for making my day, you two.
Oh, thank you, Tommy.
Thank you, Tommy. Love you.
Take care.
Love to love everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.
It is
initiation.
A lot of people don't understand what you just heard. It really is one guy, one guitar. He's doing everything, they're just recording it.
Initiation, though, is the song that I feel physically changed when I hear it. Julian,
were you saying?
Gives me chills every time I hear it. I'm so glad he's releasing it this way.
I will give anything for you to see him perform it live. Your mouth falls open.
It is an experience.
It is. You feel like you're in a rainforest.
It was an experience just recording him that last time he was here.
Yes, it was. Yes.
And again, if you want to see the videos of Tommy when he was on the show with us, go to our YouTube channel. You know what? We'll post a link to Scarlet's World.
Yes, we sure will.
So, back in the day when Tommy was still in Australia, he did several of Air Supply's hit records.
When they first started out, they didn't know how lucky they were.
Yeah, really.
And where are they today?
Matter of fact,
they're probably
still. They just recently in the Chicago
probably.
Area. Speaking of and we'll get to the shouts in a second. There was a wonderful show that I just found out we missed.
I know. You're talking Sheena Easton?
Yeah. Sheena Easton and Tiffany?
Maybe.
And it was
at the Arcata.
The Arcata,
Thank you, Ron Onesti, once again finding a place for these people to perform. And I guess the place was loaded, and they were really, really.
Sheena is still in great voice. In fact, Sheena has a new album coming out. I think it's called Strut, and it's a lot of her biggest hits. Morning Train, Strut, and a whole bunch of things.
Didn't you interview her on the heels of Morning Train? I mean, she just really
hit
it.
She's a great
big
interview.
Yeah.
Yeah, love to get her back on the show. Okay, some shouts. And let's start with some of the countries that are checking out our blog.
Is Moldavia listening again?
Well, let's find out. By the way, if you haven't checked out our blog, please do, because who knows what's going to happen with Facebook or any of the other regular social media places. So if you could check out our blog, it's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And we'd appreciate it if you would subscribe. There is no charge. We don't spam you. The only thing you get is an email whenever we do a new post. So it's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. So some of the countries that are checking out our blog in the past week, the United States, of course, Ireland, Sweden, Poland, the United Kingdom, Canada, Germany, Puerto Rico, Philippines, Moldova, India, Greece, Brazil, Belgium.
What?
And I think I don't think I'm at the bottom yet.
Why did Belgium shock me so much?
And Australia.
Wow.
So thank you for listening to us and for checking out our blog from all over the world. We really appreciate it.
Belgium.
Yeah.
And you said Moldova?
Yeah, it is spelled.
Which is different than
Moldova, Moldova.
Is Moldavia a real place or is that only in soap operas?
I think they're both real places. I think.
What?
Where we're going with this, for those of you who used to watch as we used to, as the world turned,
yes.
What was the country that the guy who was somebody's lover would apparently disappear and go to this country, which I think is actually a real country.
It started with an M, too.
Yeah.
Oh, people will know. At 312-981-7200. Pardon me. Took my breath away. I usually don't start coughing until after 1 o'clock, so forgive me.
But now your excuse is that you had some of the wonderful rice goodies that you made.
I made chocolate peanut butter Rice Krispie treats. If you haven't added peanut butter, and again, if you share it with people, be sure to tell them peanut butter's in it, because if they've got a peanut allergy, it doesn't look like it when you get the Rice Krispie treats, so I'm always very careful.
But we have to get the review from Julian. Julian, your opinion is?
12 out of 10, I will gladly give myself type 2 diabetes with it.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, all right.
Here I thought they were healthy. Excuse me. They're gluten-free, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And ironically, pardon me, but I'm trying to get rid of the tickle.
Now I'm craving some of these. I'm craving that Rice Krispie cough right now.
Yeah.
It's one little tiny kernel. Rice Krispies, we use that name because that's, of course, where the recipe started from. But Rice Krispies are not gluten-free. Do not.
So there is a gluten-free version of, what do they just call it, crispy rice or something like that?
Yes, yes. And it's
It's just like they snap and they crackle and they pop.
It's
and
the Jewel signature brand, and they are, in fact, just rice. And for some reason, Rice Krispies, which for years were gluten-free, but thankfully, we've got a big a gluten-free community online, and they realized that, wait a minute, they started adding malt to the Rice Krispies, and malt is derived from barley, and barley is a no-no if you're gluten-free.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. Now, on to the shout-outs.
Okay.
You ready? Yes, we'd like to say hey to Sherry and Bob in Arlington Heights. They always check in at the top of the show, and we really appreciate that. And by the way, my back is doing much better. Thank you. David Shine and his cat Kedzie are listening. Sherry Hanrahan and her fur babies, Lucy and Desi, are out in Romeoville. George Clemens is in Augusta, Georgia. Bonnie and George are in Elgin. Jim G's in Wisconsin. Stacy Drager is in Algonquin. Bing Besh is in Winfield. Sherry is in Bolingbrook. Peter Lawrence is in Sauk Village. Jim is in Mount Pleasant. Matt is in Racine. J.W. is in Chesapeake, VA. Cotton and her mom, Laura, are listening in Willowbrook. I love all these pets that are signing in because today is National Animal Day. Hmm. Dan Kendall is in Dublin, Ohio, and I think that's the first time Dublin, Ohio has checked in on the show. Sally Dart is in Morris. Diane Vasquez is listening. She's our graphics guru, and we appreciate all the adorable graphics she does for us. Brian Lefevre is in Bridgeport. Jeff Olin's in McHenry. Nancy Hollins is tuned in. Anita Akers is in Beloit. Jerry Q is in Tucson, Arizona, and Bill Lesser is in Springdale, Arkansas. Delphine Behrman is in Chicago. Patrice Tentera in Northwest Indiana is one of our regular listeners. Barb Larkin is in South Milwaukee. Karen May is in Denver, Colorado. And that may be a first time we've had Denver to check in.
Yeah.
I think I counted we're at 20 states that have taken the time to check in to say, in fact, they are listening tonight.
We're good.
Either the old-fashioned way, or their Sea Crane Radio, or listening to the stream.
And who was it that checked in and said next week they're going to be listening to us from Scotland, probably?
Yes, that's a listener who is in Denver tonight. She's in Denver, Colorado. That's Karen May. Next week she will be in Scotland with the Steve Bertrand tour. That's where I want to go. I want to go to Scotland. I want to go to Ireland. Yep. I want to go to Amsterdam. Do you hear me?
I hear you.
I'm putting it out in the universe because I want these things. Our buddy Chuck Snitchler in Hobart, Indiana is getting all decked out for Halloween. He checks in, as I always like to say, he's the best friend of this radio station and to our show. Bobby Danos is listening on his clock radio. Sorry about the clubs. The Cubs.
Sure, yeah. Well, they got clubbed.
They got clubbed. Yes, they did. Unless you talk to Ron.
Yeah.
Ron Brown.
If it hadn't been for those 9 runs, they would have run.
No, see, if it hadn't been for the first inning, if they'd only played 8 from 2 to 9, it would have been a tie game.
Sure.
It was that first inning that just the wheels fell off. Matt Palmer is in Racine, Wisconsin, listening on the interwebs tonight. Steve Verheeren is tuned in. Erica Baum says, I can't actually tune into the show tonight because I'm catching a Danube River cruise with my college friends, but I wanted you to see this great fall picture from Kennebunkport, and it is. It looks like something in a tourism magazine.
We want to go to Maine.
Yes, we
do. We want to go to we never really spent a whole lot of time on the East Coast, except for when we were in New York.
And I want to go in October.
Yeah.
With the rest of the world that's there.
Well, and you want to go and investigate some witchy haunts.
Yes, I want to go and check out my ancestors, for some of the first witches that were, apparently I'm related to. Sharon Malone is in K-Town. John Couture is tuned in from Warren, Michigan. Janet Appenzeller. Thank you. I just like saying the name Appenzeller. Nancy Hollins is listening in Northbrook. Susan Powell is tuned in from Memphis. Helen Thomas is in K-Town. Jan Reinhardt is in the laboratory.
By the way, this just in. From a 219 area code, the country on As the World Turns was Montega.
Yeah.
And the character from there was Tony O'Rees. That doesn't sound right to me.
It doesn't sound right.
Montega sounds right. Tony O'Rees doesn't sound right.
Yeah, Lucinda Walsh had her long-lost daughter, Sierra Esteban, in Montega.
Yeah.
Yes, it's all coming back to me now. Tavares, Florida, is tuned in. That would be Penny Schick. Rich Wade is back in Troy, Missouri, one of the Chase twins. Marie Weiss is listening in Plainfield. Roy Phillips is in Northwest Illinois. Priscilla, by the way, he says he's got us penciled in for 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Priscilla Gilbert Steig is in Joliet. Mary Gold is in Tinley Park. Beverly Goodall is in Highwood. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah, Georgia. Robin Aikens in Port Charlotte, Florida. Bonnie Nelson in Central Illinois. Lynn Kinzer is tuned in San Antonio, Florida. Mark Goldstein is in Owings Mills, Maryland, home of Motor Week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And our friend John Davis.
Debbie Hardiman is tuned in. She's in Waukesha. Gloria Hickey's in Lombard. Peter Jacobowitz is in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Susan Roche is listening with her kitties in Wheeling, Illinois. Michelle Fairfield's in Peoria. Gail Maslin is in Northern Michigan in Lake City, where it was 83 degrees today. I'm sick of this.
I want fall. I'd like to have a little more fall.
Yeah, really.
The trees are confused. Yeah. They don't know what to do. We had trees in our neighborhood that started to turn, and now they're saying, oh, no, let's bring back the green.
And my roses were going to sleep, and now they just went, oh, wait, wait, we're going to bud up again. Yeah. Ryan Corcoran's in Waukesha. Go Brewers, really? No. Mm. Ellen Maria's in Marengo. Luis Olivo is Cicero. Mark Schroeder is tuned in. He said, I'm never too busy doing other stuff rather than listening to the two of you so many nights, so many events. Well, thank you. Larry Mann's in Miami. Judy B. is listening from Nassau in the Bahamas.
Cool.
Yes, and sends us a picture out her window. Judy Graham's in Plainfield. Scott Cooper's in Naperville. Catherine Bailey is tuned in. Hey, Catherine. Bonnie Pearson is with Lola, listening in Grays Lake. And Marie Prudence is in Evergreen Park. Well, Sue Kellum just checked in from Eastern Shores of Virginia. Come visit the Eastern Shore, she says. I'd love to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Mike from where's my brain? I see words and I'm like, Akron, Ohio. Nash Vegas is tuned in tonight.
Sure.
Thank you. Coming up on Monday.
There are so many. Is the harvest moon the one that is about to happen?
It is one of three supermoons this year, which is a very big deal because the next two supermoons are November and December. And you know what it means when it's a supermoon?
Isn't it the second full moon in a month?
No, that's a blue moon. A supermoon is when it's really big and freakishly large. And you're like, is it just me or is the moon a little bigger than it usually is?
And that's when you see crypto sitting on the moon. That's the supermoon.
Yes, Steve, that's right. Sky watchers across the world are getting ready for the harvest moon. Of course, it's called the harvest moon. That's the full moon that's closest to the autumn equinox, which was back in September. But Monday, at I think it's like 10:30 our time, p.m. our time, we're going to see it in its full glory. It's going to be blinding. It's, if you're lying in bed, it'll be just coming right through your bedroom window.
Well, that happened, was it last night?
Yeah, this morning, yeah.
Boy, was there a bright moon.
I thought there was a street light outside our window. And I called you and I said, do we have a new street light? And then I realized, nope, that's a big old moon up there, not quite full moon. But it is, in fact, a supermoon. According to NASA, it will appear 14% bigger. And in moon terms, that's big.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets 14% bigger. Yes.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to other measurements. Mm-hmm. It will be 30% brighter than the faintest full moon of the year. The October full moon is the first of three consecutive full moons that we will be blessed with. November and December are the others. It will meet its peak brightness at 10:47 our time. And it will be just about 3,061,457 kilometers from Earth.
But who's counting?
Around 10% closer than average. I remember the very first time I saw a supermoon, and it was really scary because it was over Lake Michigan. And I was just a kid, and I remember thinking, is this like a biblical sign? Is something happening? Hmm. I mean, really, that's where my mind went, because it was so frighteningly big.
Were you sleeping out on the lake?
No.
I mean, on the...
We used to do that. We used
North
to sleep,
Avenue Beach or
We
something,
used to
or?
Sleep at the park, but because we didn't have air conditioning, so I know that sounds... It sounds sad, but it was wonderful because
back in the Stone Age,
it would get so hot. You just take your pallet and go down to the lakefront and throw it on the grass and sleep. And my dad would fish, and it was wonderful. But I remember seeing that big supermoon and literally frightened, thinking it was kind of an end of the world kind of thing. And we didn't talk about things like supermoons back then. Of course, we didn't have the internet to educate us on all of this good stuff.
Well, speaking of frightening.
Yes.
'Tis the month of October.
Mm-hmm.
And as has been our wont for the past 40-some-odd years, We have some scary stories that we're going to share with you. And we should mention that our last show before Halloween, we will be replaying our interview with Chicago's ghost hunter, Richard Crow, mm-hmm. and his telling of the story of Resurrection Mary. But each week of the month of October, we're going to play a scary story. And the one we have tonight is one that is a classic. If you've heard it before, you know where we're going. If you've never heard it, you're going to hear one of the scariest stories that I think anyone has ever presented. Yeah. This was from the mind of Arch Obler, who for years, among other things, was the responsible for a radio show called Lights Out. I didn't know you just found out he was a Chicagoan.
Chicagoan, yes, and started as a radio writer in his 20s. And Lights Out was already established. And the guy that was doing Lights Out moved on, and they tapped Obler to do Lights Out. And he was not real happy about doing horror. But they said, you're going to be on at midnight. You know, you're going to have freedom that you don't have during the day. And he realized he could run with it.
And he did. And what you're about to hear now was not from the Lights Out show, but it was in that vein. Mm-hmm. This was from an album called Drop Dead that Arch Obler put out in 1962. And as we usually do when we play these stories, we remind you to just, well, first of all, if you're all by yourself, just go over and turn off the light. Okay, now it's dark in the room. And turn your back to the radio. So all you hear is my voice coming from behind you. But don't be scared. Just keep thinking, it's only a story. It's only a story. It's only a story.
Turning.
The alarm said Pine Street, didn't it?
Oh, yes, yes, of course. So why this siren? The only traffic out here is on horseback.
Yeah. Yeah, you can say that again, Doc. It's from nothing to nowhere.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah, right with you, Doc. Right with you. Said somebody was hurt?
That's what the switchboard said.
Gee, what a dump. Huh. Don't seem to be a bell.
Oh, there must be. There's a light in there. Try the door.
Yeah, it's open.
Well, let's go.
All right.
Hello in there. Hello. This is another false alarm. Anybody here? I'm a doctor.
Hey, look. In the corner. This I gotta see.
Lady, I'm a doctor from General Hospital. Now, what's the matter?
She is screwy, all right, ain't she?
Frightened.
Now, Doc, wait. Where are you going?
Can't get it open.
What do you want to go in there for?
Can't get this open.
Okay.
Whoever is hurt must be in there. Blasted door. Come on, we'll break it down.
But the woman.
Forget the woman. Come on, put your shoulder to it.
It's dark.
Yeah.
Can't see a thing.
Go on back in the other room and get that kerosene lamp.
Here, Doc. The lamp.
Okay. Hold it high.
Yeah?
Mother in heaven.
On the floor. What is it?
It's a man.
Oh, no. It can't be.
Yes, I tell you, yes, it's a man. A man. And he's been turned inside out.
Inside out?
Yes, see for yourself. It's a man. But the skin is the inside. The raw flesh is the outside. A man turned inside out. I could turn a glove inside.
It's alive. It's alive.
I see it.
It's trying to get up.
Oh, no.
Trying to get up, I tell you. Trying to move.
Sam, hold that light high.
Watch. Look at it rolling over.
Stop it,
trying to get up.
Stop that.
Trying to get up on its knees. Doc, make it stop. Kill it. Do something.
Sam, stop.
Man can't live inside.
Stop. Stop.
Like that.
I stop. Hysterical old woman. That's what you are. Now you stand there and shut up. Look. There's another door.
Yeah. Open.
The answer might be in there.
Doc, don't. We got
the lantern. Bring it.
Gee, Doc, why can't we just go?
Hold it high.
Doc, what?
Don't move. There's no floor in there.
I don't see nothing. Nothing but dark.
Well, look. That dark sort of spills over on the edges.
Huh?
Well, look, I tell you. It's a deeper dark than dark. Something moving in there.
Doc, close the door.
No, no, wait.
Then I'll close it.
Oh, you fool, open that door. I've got to see what... He's coming in here.
Come on, Doc, let's get out of here.
No, Sam, I'm going to find out what this is all about. All my life, things have been what they've been. I'm going to know all about this.
Please, Doc, please, let's get out of here.
Woman, if you know anything, tell me. What was it we saw back of that door where the floor should have been? Do you know?
She's going to the door. She's going to open it.
Yes.
Oh, Doc, will you listen to me? Let's get out of here.
No, now wait. She's just standing there, looking in at the dark.
Yeah. Doc? What's that coming up out of the hole in the floor?
The dark.
It's like black smoke. Listen to it. It's reaching up to her.
Yes.
What is it? Smoke? Black? What?
Crawling up around her. No.
Inside out. It turned her inside out.
Sam. Sam, get up. Sam, open your eyes. The shadows are crawling along the floor toward us. Come on, Sam. Come on. Sam, you're... Oh, you're too heavy. I can't lift you. Sam, you've got to hear me. The shadows, they're crawling toward me along the floor. I can't leave you. You saw what they did to her. Look at her. Inside out. A woman inside out. Oh, Sam. I'll drag you out of here. Oh, you're so heavy. They're coming faster and faster. Like long black fingers. Ah, my legs. Let go of me. Sam, I can't help you. They're holding me back. The black. It's covering you. Sam! No. No, you thing, whatever you are, get off me. Stop covering me. I've got to get out of here. I've got to tell them all about you. I've got to tell everyone there's something like you loose in the world. Got to warn everybody. Get off me. Covering me over. My head. My face. My face. My mouth.
It's only a story.
I just have to giggle, otherwise I go, I was walking down the hall to grab a cup of coffee, and so I was listening.
All by yourself.
Those sound effects. Theater of the mind.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
Because you're not limited to a 52-inch mm-hmm. or a 70-inch screen. You've got mm-hmm. your mind.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think, Julian?
I'm spooked. I'm scared.
I'm scared.
Mother, help.
I noticed he turned the lights on in his studio, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not because I'm scared.
No, of course not.
That's preposterous. I'm a 31-year-old man. We don't get scared.
Nope.
Yes, that's one of the classics. And a listener texted and said, what about Chicken Heart? And look, we got the month of October, okay? Yeah. Again.
Which is the one that Wally Phillips always used to play?
That was Chicken Heart.
Was it Chicken Heart?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and the dentist. I hate the dentist. Every dentist hates it too, because it's everybody's nightmare to think of a dentist that's just a little bit on the cruel side.
So we may play some more Arch Obler. We also will play some Boris Karloff.
Mm-hmm.
He has some interesting ones.
Some good stuff like that. Also heard from a listener who is trying to get a hold of that Arch Obler album. Occasionally, want to know how can you get it? Occasionally, it will pop up on eBay.
Yeah.
But it's, sadly, it's not in circulation.
I don't think they've ever released it on a CD.
Somebody should.
Yeah.
I'm full of great ideas tonight. Write that book and release that CD.
There you go.
I don't want to do the work. You people do it.
No, okay, there's your assignment.
That's right.
So, 55 years ago today, Janis Joplin died.
At the age of 27. Unbelievable. And it's hard to wrap your mind around the fact that she was in her 20s when she was singing like that.
And she had just recorded the album that became probably her biggest selling album, Pearl.
Right. That was only her second album, right?
No, she had third, maybe fourth, at least third.
Mm-hmm.
I've told this story before. One of the strangest concert experience I ever had. I was fortunate enough to introduce Janis, Indianapolis, roughly 1970 or 71, at the Indianapolis Coliseum. And
it had to be 70 if she died in 70.
Yeah, well, yeah, duh. Thank you.
You kind of caught me there. I'm like, okay.
And it was a pastime for her to go on. And since I was introducing her, I was tasked with going backstage and trying to remind her that she needed to go on stage. And she had a bottle of, I don't know what it was.
Probably Jack.
Probably. And she was trying to seduce one of the maintenance men backstage. And he was trying to ignore her, and I think he was glad when I walked up. She wasn't, and I reminded her that it was kind of long past time when she was supposed to be on stage, and so
she was strung out. But when she walked out on stage,
she was just Janis, and that I introduced her. She came out and did one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen. But she was ticked off. I was sitting right off the stage, and occasionally she would look down at me. I mean, she was mad.
Wow.
And I'm sorry, but you know.
That's my job. And it's your job to get out on stage.
But as ticked off as she was, wow, was she extraordinary. Yeah. Just as good as people said she was better.
Yeah. A really troubled soul.
Yeah.
Because the story goes that the last thing that she was wrote about was a letter to her mother when she was asking her mother, are you proud of me? She just really, really sadly died of a heroin overdose and often had a bottle of Jack with her.
Yep.
Music still sounds good, though, 55 years later. Yeah.
We're going to talk all things automotive with the man who is the publisher of Consumer Guide. That will be your Tom Appelt.
What are you in these days? What are you driving?
I am at the moment. I'm driving a delightful car, and I'm so glad that it's a car and that it's still around, and it's not going to be around much longer. And that is the Volkswagen Golf GTI. This is the 40th anniversary of the GTI. It is still based on the Golf, and it is still kind of a really caffeinated Golf with a beefed up suspension, a little bit more power, really fantastic steering feel, unbelievably fun handling. Everything about this car is fun. You can still get it with a manual transmission.
Oh, wow.
The version I'm driving has a 7-speed dual clutch automatic that works very well with this engine. And a word of warning, if you're thinking about driving this car, absolutely test drive it. It is really visceral. I mean, it's a little bit loud. It rides a little bit firm. It's very engaging. But if you commute long distances every day, might not be your ride.
Yeah. You're thinking, I'm feeling it, right?
Yeah.
Brings up the question, how many cars are still made with manual transmission?
Almost none. You still have the Porsche cars, but they're discontinuing their 718 series of cars. That is the Cayman and the Boxster. Those are going away. So at Porsche, that'll be just the 911. I think Volkswagen still has the Jetta GLI with stick. Subaru still has the WRX, which is a delightful car. That can still be had with stick. Not a lot of other cars. The number is shrinking every year. They are going away.
For a while, I thought there was a Mustang, but has that gone away?
Oh, the Mustang V8 can still be had. The Mustang GT can still be had with a stick. You're correct, Steve.
Now, you said that you were happy that this Golf was a car. How many, are there a lot of cars available? Or are we talking mainly we've transitioned to everything's a sport ute?
Everything is a sport ute now, yeah, and we're going to just start calling those cars because
yes.
What we used to consider cars really don't exist anymore. And Ford, for example, if you take the Mustang out of the equation, Ford doesn't sell. All of Ford and Lincoln does not sell a car in the U.S.
Wow.
And there's still a couple of Cadillacs and the Corvette over at General Motors, but not much there. Really, Honda and Toyota and Mazda, and to some extent, Nissan, they're still selling compact and mid-sized cars. Really not a lot of other ones.
So Hyundai's not selling anything in that category.
Hyundai does have a compact and mid-sized car. And actually, the little Elantra sells pretty well.
Okay.
That may be an odd question, but it popped into my head, so I will pop it out. the amount of space that you have in sport utilities today, is that equivalent to the kind of space you used to have in cars before we downsized everything because of the gas crisis?
Well, that's a fun, yeah. There's a very interesting thing that happens when shoppers walk into a showroom. A surprising number of people looking for a mid-sized car would leave showrooms with a compact crossover. And there was sort of a space and interior volume equivalency before those vehicles. But generally, because they stacked higher, crossovers do offer more interior volume for the footprint of the vehicle.
Because I can recall back in the day when I was a mini kid, driving in vehicles that to me seemed like they had the interior space that is comparable to what we would see in some sport utes today.
Some did. I remember my father had a 79 Thunderbird. People might remember that vehicle, and you could sleep on the hood comfortably. It was that big.
Yeah.
And that seemed to have a reasonable amount of interior space, but the car was super long. Like, it made terrible use of space overall, but the front seat was super comfortable and you could squeeze me in the back seat. So, I mean, cars were roomy-ish, I guess.
Well,
see, I'm going back even before that. I'm going back to when I was a mini kid in like my dad's Studebaker and some of his older Buicks and things like that. Before the 70s, everything has to be downsized gas crunch.
Right. Well, you know what happened too, Steve? It was roughly 1959 that the General Motors vehicles were significantly redesigned, and they were made lower and wider. Those vehicles were actually less space efficient. Before that, we were talking about cars from the 50s that were kind of big, roomy bubbles. Like, you could squeeze 13 people into those cars because the greenhouse, the passenger compartment, was actually quite spacious.
Funny you should say that, because I was reminded of 1964. My mother was taking me and the kids on the block for Italian Ice. This was over in Old Town. And we had a 64 Caprice. she was pulled over, and we kids were terrified because the cops pulled over with lights and the whole works because she had 11 children in the car. 11 children. And he says, ma'am, you can't see out your back window. You have to get those kids down. So you've got like five kids and then kids in their lap, and then you got the front seat. It was a boat. It was amazing. And she said, okay, officer. And she turned around and she said, you heard the officer? And we were like, yeah, oh, okay. We're not getting arrested, are we? And we all kind of hunkered down in the seat. We were like terrified. And she didn't get a ticket, but it was one of those scary moments.
That reminds me of something that we saw. Was it last week or the
yes,
week before?
Here at the radio
in
station.
In this parking garage in this building that we're getting ready to leave, and this car pulls in.
It was like a Camry, right?
Something like
that. An older
that.
Camry.
And they were looking around for a parking space. They finally find a parking space.
It was a clown car, Tom.
It was like, I want to say we counted seven people that
seven
got out of this Camry.
Seven grown men got out of that car. And we said, oh, my God. And seven.
Somebody had to be laying on the floorboard or something. Or in the trunk.
They were very comfortable because, you know, the front seat, you can see two people. So the rest of them were on top of each other in the back. The weird thing.
But we didn't notice that as they drove by us the first time.
But remember what happened? They drove around. They got out of the car. They walked to the elevator, turned around, and went back to their car after paying to park and left.
Yeah.
Huh. And we're just sitting in the parking lot going, something weird just happened.
Yeah, we had no idea what was going on.
It was very weird.
Best case scenario, five of them were belted. Best case.
Yes, that's right. Exactly.
We should mention, because the blatant plug light just started flashing, that people should check out consumerguide.com. And when they do, what will they find?
All of my new car reviews, you can listen to podcasts, the Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast, right there on our homepage. Plus, our 2025 Best Buy list is up. That's super handy if you're shopping for a car. The 2026 Best Buy list goes up in about a month, so you can look forward to that, too. Also, if people want to do me a huge favor, if they could review our podcast on Apple, that would be super handy.
Okay. And this podcast is number 294. That's the most recent one you dropped, huh?
Yes, six more episodes to our 300th.
Doesn't that freak you out? That's a lot of words.
It is. I don't think I'm that imaginative. Somehow I got through three. But, we've been doing this for about 5 years now.
Yeah.
But now here's the question. Were there more words or donuts in the podcast?
A lot of donuts. And my co-host, Jill, has decided to get really picky about donuts. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I don't know what the deal is, but like filled donuts are quote-unquote gross, which I don't understand.
I think it was the last picture you posted of Jill, and the look on her face was, what?
That was a look of disdain.
Yes.
You know, like,
I mean, there was a Long John and a cinnamon donut. I don't know how you go wrong there.
Stop talking about food. It's too early.
I wish somebody would make gluten-free Long Johns. I used to love Long Johns.
I'm going to master them. No, I better not master them. That would be very dangerous. No, I'm not going there. I'm putting it out in the universe. I'm not doing that. Now I'm so hungry. A listener has already texted and said, what's for dinner when you get home? And I had to tell him.
Donuts.
And then he says, oh, stop it. So the listener says, what's for dinner? And I said, well, we're going to have cheeseburger pie and corn on the cob. And he writes back and says, oh, that sounds interesting. How do I make that? So I had to take the time to share the recipe. But I digress. It says here on your podcast number 294, your award-winning podcast, that you're driving the redesigned Leaf in that podcast.
Mm-hmm.
What was your take on that car?
The Nissan Leaf has been completely redesigned, and people familiar with this, the Leaf was really one of the first EVs you could buy in the U.S., and it was a little bit underwhelming. It actually worked well. The range was a little disappointing. The price was actually reasonably attractive, but with 80 miles of range, it wasn't that interesting, and people didn't really leap to buy that. But the Leaf is now completely redesigned for 2026. It is no longer a car that looks like a shoe, but actually an attractive little crossover. Its range is now up over 300 miles in certain trim levels, and the Right now, the least expensive model is $29,995. They will be bringing out a $25,000 model sometime next year or the following year. So they're really well positioned price wise in this new post incentive era. Now that the federal tax credits have been shut down,
that was as of September 30th, right?
Yep, that was it.
Yep. Apparently, there's a loophole that allows her credits on purchases with a binding contract and a payment made by the deadline. Well, that's already passed. So
there's a crazy story there, though, if you saw that. General Motors and Ford decided to go ahead and put down payments down on a huge number of vehicles. So these vehicles have technically been sold, and they qualify for the tax credit.
What?
Yeah. I don't know how many vehicles. I don't understand the legalese here. I just know that General Motors and Ford managed to continue, at least for the rest of 2025, for a number of their models to be able to offer the incentive.
Does that work? They bought the cars from themselves, and they're going to resell them to you?
Yes.
Are they going to give you the credit?
But if that is the case...
Yes.
Then aren't you buying a pre-owned
vehicle?
So shouldn't you get a really good discount on that pre-owned vehicle?
I think the way it works is that it'll work the exact same way that leasing does, where it'll be held, the ownership will be held by the lessor. So it's technically not used. It's just we've got the lease signed for, we just don't know who's signing for it yet.
I would love to have been in that meeting when somebody said,
right?
Brainstorm, let's
it's
do
clever.
This.
Boy, this sounds like the lawyers earned their pay that day.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm sure there was a lot of, does this work? Are we sure this works?
Yeah, right.
That's a lot of money if it doesn't work.
Yeah. The Alternative Fuel Vehicle Refueling Property Tax Credit for charging equipment continues until June 30th of 2026. The Alternative Fuel Vehicle Refueling Property Tax Credit. So that's... away from your car, that's your home, right?
Yeah, and I believe that's probably for commercial and multi-residential properties, I think.
I don't want to get political here, but I may. Who knows? The question is, how is the automotive industry as a whole viewing Trump's tariffs on off? And who knows what's going on this week or next week? How does the automotive industry view what's coming out of Washington right now?
Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard interviews with Jim Farley at Ford and Mary Barra at GM talking about this, and they're extraordinarily diplomatic about it, but they're clearly frustrated. And they're in a position now where they have to sort of drag their feet on everything that they want to do. Because they don't want to shut things down. They have supply chains built up. They have infrastructure to build these vehicles. They don't want to shut that stuff down. And everyone seems to believe that if the administration changes in 3.5 years, I guess, that the next administration will be far more favorable to alternative fuel vehicles. So no one is hitting the brakes. Well, they're hitting the brakes, but no one is quitting, as it turns out. But that said, a number of vehicles have been canceled. That we may see years later, but like Ram has canceled the electric version of the big Ram pickup, for example, and Nissan has brought out this redesigned Leaf, but they've canceled the compact Ariya that was out there. So they're going to offer just one EV in the U.S.
By the way, speaking of Nissan, I have to ask, what's going on with Infiniti? Are they going to be around for a while or not? Because we heard rumors that not so much, and then, well, maybe. But what's the latest?
I have the head of Infiniti coming on the podcast in a couple of weeks. So he's willing to talk about that. Infiniti seems to have interesting plans. They have killed their two cheapest models, both of which were imported from Mexico, so they were problematic anyway. And I think that they're going to be focusing on their big QX80, which is like an Escalade or a Navigator, and their midsize QX60, which is a midsize crossover. And where they go from there, I'm not entirely sure. And I don't know if that's enough volume, but they seem to be excited about where they are moving forward. So we'll see what the new product is. Oh, I'm sorry. There is a new QX65 coming, which is a coupe-like version of the QX60, which is a really silly design trend, but it seems to actually sell cars.
Okay. We had some questions, Tom, from our listeners. I want to take you back to the subject of the tariffs. And Lupe works for a Ford supplier. And we've heard from Lupe over the years. I think he's genuinely concerned that Ford runs three shifts at this point in time. And he says, Tom, do you know anything about how tariffs might affect a place like Ford locally?
Yeah, so the Torrance Avenue plant down on the south side of Chicago is the exclusive manufacturer of the Ford Explorer, a very popular three-row crossover. The Explorer is not as American-made as some other vehicles in that segment. It's 60 or 65% American, so it is subject to some complications and cost related issues having to do with imported vehicles or importing content primarily from Canada and from Mexico, though most of that stuff is compliant. I don't think there's going to be an issue with Explorer sales that would be different than general sales overall. Mm. I think they'll stay strong. The other thing about the Explorer, too, is that it is the single most popular patrol car. Police agencies love the Explorer.
Oh, yeah.
And that demand is largely inelastic. So I don't anticipate a big slowdown in Explorer sales anytime soon. And the vehicle was just updated, too. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Now, should we put in a clarification here? The Explorer, to my knowledge, is not made from the ground up at Torrance. It is assembled at Torrance with parts, as you said, that are imported from various places.
Yeah, it's about 60% built. I mean, the content is about 60% domestic. Mm-hmm. I believe the engine is built elsewhere. They do have their own stamping plant, and there is a big supplier base around that. It's mostly built there, but there is stuff that is brought in from elsewhere.
Where is the Lincoln Aviator built? Because I know for a while the Aviator and the Explorer were built at the same plant, I believe.
It was the Aviator. Yeah, the Aviator should still be built there. I'll check that real quick. But I don't know why it wouldn't be, because they're fundamentally the same vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, on the subject of tariffs, a listener says, a follow-up, what happens to the auto industry if the Supreme Court overturns the tariffs when they hear the case in November? Any thoughts on that?
I don't think there's going to be a massive overturn. What's come into question, as I understand it, is a lot of the retaliatory tariffs and some of the tariffs on raw materials.
Mm-hmm.
It was determined. But the automotive tariffs seem to be what they are.
Yeah,
I think we're kind of stuck with those. Mm-hmm. And they're heavy-duty tariffs. They will long-term mean increased prices, unfortunately.
Well, on that subject, a listener had an interesting theory here. Let me find it. About vehicles, aren't they considered certified? And wouldn't that be what Ford and General Motors would do with the EVs that they purchased to resell to get around eliminating the tax credit? Would they be certified?
So it would be sold as a dealer's certified vehicle?
I don't think that's what they're going to do, because that would mean selling it as a used vehicle, because ownership is transferred from Ford to basically Ford's captive lender. That vehicle is still new. So making it a certified pre-owned vehicle would suggest that it's used and would diminish its value somewhat.
Right.
Certified. My daughter just bought a certified car. It's a really interesting avenue for people looking for something nearly new.
A listener says, do you, Tom, get a feel for how vehicle sales are going with the uncertainty at this point?
Yeah, great question. We're about to find out. The third quarter sales were huge, and last month of third quarter, September sales were huge, boosted by EV sales, and that's predictable.
Mm.
So even Tesla had a really good month in September, as Tesla reports. So what happens next will be interesting. EV sales are definitely going to fall. We know that. But the overall market is cruising at around 16 million units for the year, which is where everyone thought it was going to be.
Hmm.
So sales are good. They're good. They're not great. And we have never recovered from COVID, by the way. It's just the 16 is sort of the new standard.
Don't know if you know the answer to this, but what, if anything, is the government shutdown going to do to the automotive industry?
There's one really big problem, and hopefully it can get worked around. But the EPA is at that time of the year where manufacturers are tendering their numbers for EPA numbers and EPA approval. And there's no one working at the EPA right now. Mm-hmm. And if this drags out too long or if they can't find a workaround, it's entirely possible that vehicles are being built that can't be sold because they don't have completed window stickers. It's kind of a ridiculous thing. But yeah, every year manufacturers tender the numbers. The EPA does not actually test physically vehicles anymore for emissions. What they do is go over the paperwork submitted by manufacturers. And those engineers and those administrators aren't there right now.
When did the EPA stop doing its own tests?
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
Last 20 years, I think. Last 15
years. Oh, okay.
Really?
Fine.
Because, again, for people, we talk about the window sticker. When you see those numbers, and this is suggesting how much you're going to get on the road and how many miles you're going to get in the city, that's what their job was to tell you that's what you can expect. And some people take that as gospel. They're like, wait, I'm taking my car back. I'm not getting what it says I should be getting on my window sticker.
Yeah, no, we might remember, too. I didn't know this either, and it wasn't until Hyundai and Ford got into trouble for their exaggerated EPA numbers. Ford for the C-Max, which they advertised 45 mpg for, and Hyundai for the Sonata, which they were advertising 35 mpg for, and those are the numbers they tended to the EPA, and people were furious because they weren't getting anywhere near these numbers. And that's when we learned that the EPA doesn't do the testing. We're trusting manufacturers to submit accurate numbers.
So we just get a bunch of pencil pushers in there.
Kind of. There are engineers on staff, but they don't do physical testing.
That is shocking. And that is one of those wrinkles with the shutdown of the government that you don't consider that.
Speaking of miles per gallon, I have to share with you.
You have to gloat.
And I had Johnny take a look. As I was driving, we came in on the drive today. We are driving a 2005 Cadillac DeVille DTS big Northstar engine. And what was the mileage on our speedometer coming down the
34.3.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was taking pictures. He wanted me to take a picture of it, too, so I could send it to you. But you're driving at the speed limit's 40.
Speed limit.
You were 45 miles an hour, which that impacts your speed. It was a steady from the moment we got on the drive all the way to downtown, so that helped. But still, that's pretty darn impressive.
I mentioned that to underscore the cheapest maintenance I've ever found for any vehicle. I don't care what this is one place where I disagree with the manuals, because they will say, you don't have to change the oil for who knows how many miles. 3,000 miles, 3 months, I change the oil. Period. End of story.
Even if it's 500 miles in 3 months, you change the oil. Yes. And you've had people quibble with you. Well, I see on your door. And you go, I'm paying for it.
Yep.
So go ahead and change it.
There's absolutely no harm that can be done by changing your oil more often. And the thing that can fail, and you would never know it, is the oil filter itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if the oil filter tears inside, then you're just passing garbage around into the engine that isn't being filtered out, little metal belts, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So doing it more often is an excellent safety thing, and it's very affordable to do that. It's a great way to keep your car. And I'm a big proponent of changing your oil more often than stated in the manual as well.
So now he's gone from gloating to being smug.
Yeah.
He gloated.
And your point is?
Now he's looking at me like, see? Because I've said before, really?
As Dizzy Dean said, it ain't bragging if you done it.
That's true. We are talking cars with Tom Appel.
We should, I don't know if anyone's done this, we should do a little research to find out which instruments are best for testing car sound systems. Like, pianos are better for some. Is guitar better for some?
Bass.
You want a heavy bass?
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to an engineer from AKG who AKG licenses the system that you find in a number of Cadillac products, including the Escalade, where they have a 31-speaker system. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me that the song they used, the single song, and you guys are going to have to help me with the song name. It was the number one hit by the average white band.
Pick up the pieces.
Oh, Cut the Cake?
That's it.
Which one? Cut the Cake or Pick Up the Pieces?
Pick Up the Pieces.
Yeah.
And that's they love that song to test audio systems in vehicles. And I think it's because there's such a broad range of instruments.
And I love Pick Up the Pieces. But if Pick Up the Pieces is good for your audio system, I would think a lot of James Brown stuff would be good for your audio system.
A listener says Donald Fagen's The Nightfly album is industry standard for testing audio mixes in large stadium shows, and many audiophiles swear by it for their home audio. We're going to have to look that up. Donald Fagen.
I had not heard that.
The Nightfly. Real quick question, Tom. Did Volkswagen stop making the Bug convertible?
Yeah, the Beetle is gone everywhere. There was the Beetle, then there was the new Beetle, which was like the late 90s. It had a good run. They didn't know how to redesign a heritage vehicle, and sales started to slump, and they finally got rid of that vehicle. Hmm. So, yeah, no Bugs.
Any convertibles?
Volkswagen does not sell a convertible at the time. And you know what? While we lament the passing of the manual transmission, we may want to worry about convertibles because there's not a lot of those left anymore either.
Yeah. Any other
Certainly
brands?
No affordable ones.
Any other brands off the top of your head?
Of convertibles?
Yeah.
Well, we've got the Ford Mustang, which that's now a $50,000 vehicle. Ooh. Mercedes, of course, still sells their legendary SL. Mm-hmm. BMW has a couple. There's still the Miata.
Yeah.
A delightful car if you can contort yourself into it.
Yes.
A video of me would be super viral of me getting in and out of a Miata.
Are we talking clown car then for real?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, clown of one, but yeah, it would be rough.
I miss the Sebring convertible. That was great.
The Chrysler Sebring convertible. Oh. And the one that had that top that went into the
automatic,
trunk.
Automatic, yes.
That was so cool.
Those were
super popular rental cars, especially in California and Florida.
Yeah, in fact, that's the first time we drove one was in California, Monterey.
Well, but before we let the clock run out on us, we need to talk about some recalls. What do you got?
Yeah.
It's not a visit with Steve and Johnny unless there's a big Ford recall.
Of course.
And a big Ford recall that's scary. 115,000 Ford Super Duties, so F-250s, F-350s, and F-450s from 2020 to 2021. There's a lot of verbiage here that seems to suggest that the steering wheel simply comes loose.
What?
Yeah, it's not quite like a Keystone Cops thing, but you'll be turning the wheel and it's not connected to the steering rack.
No.
That seems to be what's happening here. They call it the upper shaft hard slider, but basically it says complete loss of control. It affects 200,000 vehicles. Holy and gosh. Where is this? They will be sending out word October 6th, so soon. 2020 through 2021.
Wow.
So that's a big one.
It's a big one in part because that is one of Ford's largest selling vehicles, right?
It's certainly their most profitable. Those big, heavy trucks are super profitable. They're equipped with those insanely expensive diesel engines. They're highly capable. I mean, they're very good vehicles at doing what they're supposed to do. Except turn. Yeah. If you want to go straight, you're fine.
Oh, my gosh. I'm stunned.
But speaking of Ford, we heard from one of our texters who said, yes, they are making the Aviator and the Explorer at the Torrance Avenue plant.
Okay, we got a Honda recall. Over 700,000 vehicles, including the 23, 24 Accord and Accord Hybrid, 25 Civic and Civic Hybrid, and the 23 to 25 CRV Hybrid. A cracking fuel pump could leak fuel, creating a fire hazard. Oh. Again, so often we talk about software updates. You pray for a software update when you start hearing about the steering wheel's not connecting or maybe a fire.
Yeah, and fuel pumps are messy because they have to take the tank off the vehicle to get to the fuel pump. So that's a really expensive recall for Honda.
Ouch. All right, any other recalls we need to mention?
Yeah, there's a big one here from BMW, and it covers an enormous number of models. But basically, a bunch of models that have the company's B48 2-liter turbocharged engine from 2019 to 2022. There is a problem with the engine that can lead to an underhood fire. And this is one of those park it outside requests.
Oh, boy.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't hear about those too much. Word goes out November 15th, 200,000 vehicles. And included in this, interestingly, is the Toyota Supra.
Really?
The Supra was designed with BMW and is built at the same factory in Switzerland. Or, sorry, Austria. My bad, Austria.
Wow. A listener has a question, and we've experienced it. Can we pick up on this next time you're on the show with us? The listener says, how do you feel about vehicles being sold without a spare tire? We recently went through that.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating, it's maddening, and it's expensive.
We bought a spare tire after the fact for one vehicle.
And so often we find that people say, well, I didn't think of that when I went shopping for the car, and now I find out I don't have one. So
I'm a terrible dad because I don't know if my daughter's car has a spare tire. It's a great question,
actually. You better check on it. Let's talk about it in 2 weeks because he says a number of them are offering inflator kits instead of run flats, and that just doesn't cut it. You know, you need to be able to put a new tire on your car.
Yeah, the inflator kit, too, is a bit of a bummer because it can ruin the tire. It might save you, but after that, you're out of tire.
Yeah.
In fact, he says, I understand that once an inflator is used, one cannot patch the tire. That's it.
That's the problem, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good topic. We will talk about that in 2 weeks.
Great.
Tom is back with us.
Before we let you get out of here, people can follow you how and where?
Check us out at consumerguide.com. Drop me a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com. And if you want to do me a huge favor, please review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. It would be a big help.
Yes, yes.
And they're great podcasts. And you can follow Tom on Blue Sky at Car Guy Tom on Blue Sky.
Yep, that's me. Yep.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Now go make the donuts.
Thanks, Tom. Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Time for this week's edition of Sports Between the Sheets. And Gabe, tell me something good.
Oh, my pleasure. most definitely. Well, although the Bears are on a bye week, they do have a 2-game winning streak.
Yes.
So we definitely have that going for us.
Let me ask you this, though. Did you listen to Hamp and OB last Sunday?
I did not get a chance to, but
you need to find the podcast, replay it. It was classic.
I almost reached out to you because I turned to Steve and I said, let's turn this into a drinking game. Then I said, nope, that won't work because
was going to be how many times OB said the quarterback that they beat was the worst he'd ever seen.
And he said, that game was god-awful. God-awful.
Yep.
Then 5 minutes later, he'd say, have I told you that Bears game was god-awful? And I said, oh, my gosh, I am drunk.
Well, you know, there are times where I do think that they overreact, but you know what? I'd have to agree with them because I certainly was nervous watching that game and
nervous.
Oh yeah.
Lord God Almighty, what is going on here?
Great, we woke him up. Sorry, OB. But I, you know, funny note about the game. So the last 5 or 6 minutes of that game, I actually watched it on my phone because my wife and I were out to dinner.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. So my wife was worried that I was going to start screaming and hollering like a crazy person, but I kept my composure, and it just so happened to be where we were eating. All the, waiters and waitresses were wearing Bears jerseys, which drove her nuts because she hates football, as I've talked about on the show numerous times. So she was, like, worried that we were all going to start celebrating, and
gosh.
We all kept our composure, but we were glad that they won, and my wife was shockingly surprised. She's like, wait a minute, you're not jumping up and celebrating? I'm like, we're in a public place. I'm not at home.
Oh, that's funny. That's really funny.
But, certainly, obviously, there was a lot to be cleaned up from that game.
Yeah.
it would take me all night to list everything that needs to be fixed from that game. But, take the win. When they get back, probably probably starting Monday or Tuesday when they get back from their bye week, and hopefully they'll be rested up, and hopefully they'll get those injuries healed up too. That's a big thing too, mm-hmm. that they've been dealing with all season. But, you know, look at the film. You know, let's start correcting some of these mistakes. The penalties, please, Lord, please get rid of those penalties.
Well, the good news is the Bears can't lose today.
Right.
That's
they can't lose today. but they can watch the rest of the division, get beat up. But, mm-hmm. Certainly there's a lot of things to clean up with the team. Obviously, get guys healthy. But certainly, the week off could probably do them some good.
Mm-hmm.
But, definitely take the two-game winning streak. But, certainly there were some times during that game where I was like, I don't think they're going to walk out with a win here. And I would agree with I would agree with Hampton because, as I had said last week, that the Raiders, they have some issues mm-hmm. of their own. They're definitely a patchwork team right now. Aside from Ashton Jeanty, the rookie running back, as you see, he gashed the Bears defense, and that's something that needs to be cleaned up too. And, Max Crosby, their defensive end, he couldn't be stopped initially, but then when they made a change on the offensive line, all of a sudden he was a non-factor. So that's another thing that the Bears got to, really figure out which five guys are going to start from here on out, barring injury, because, this rotating offensive tackle stuff is kind of starting to become problematic. But
now I want to segue up to Milwaukee, and I don't know if you happened to hear the conversation we had with Ron earlier tonight, where he said, except for those 9 points,
except
the Cubs would have won.
In all fairness, he said, except for the first inning, it was a tie game.
Yeah, right.
It would have been a tie at 3.
Ron's probably having a cigar and a glass of some alcoholic beverage right now. So, yeah. Ron, if you're listening, we love you, Ron.
But he reminds
me of like those, very optimistic 80s and 90s Cubs fans who always find positivity in losses.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of thought it was a bad idea to start Matthew Boyd on just, 3-4 days rest.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's still no Cade Horton. Don't know if he'll pitch this postseason. Obviously, that rib injury is very tricky. But, they probably should have put somebody else in that role. And obviously, I know Imanaga has not been himself this last month. Don't know what happened, but certainly he was awful. Yeah,
that's been a real surprise.
Yeah, he was lights out all season, and then the last month or so, he just has not been himself. So, and as we had also talked about, heading towards the end of the regular season, that pitching was a big concern for this team. So that's definitely something that they got to figure out if they're going to get back into the series and survive. Because we saw how tough the Brewers played them during the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw how the Cubs had, I forgot how many games they were ahead of them at the All-Star break, and we saw how the Brewers had those historic winning streaks and just surpassed the Cubs and ran away with the division. So now we're talking about, inching closer to the World Series being on the line here. So the Cubs definitely got to, get this pitching thing figured out. Otherwise, they're going home.
This was the year that a book could be written on how the pre- and post-All-Star game affected both the Cubs and the Sox.
Yeah. But we've got no football, no baseball for Sunday.
So again, the Cubs can't lose either.
90-degree weather, so get out and enjoy it while you can.
And how about those Blackhawks?
Never mind.
Can we still make the excuse that it's just preseason?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think Charlie said it was more important for the other team. It was not so important for the Hawks. And I went, I just talked to Ron Brown about the Cubs.
Yeah.
They tied with Milwaukee.
What
fantasy are these guys living in?
In Charlie's defense, you got to remember that the Blackhawks, probably for those first two, maybe three games of the preseason, the starters didn't see a lot of action. So these last couple of games are probably the most ice time the starters have seen so far in this preseason. So hopefully they can gel it together once the season starts. But, again, this is still a team that's still technically rebuilding. Charlie, we love you too. This is still a Blackhawks team that's still learning, that's still growing. Although I will say they probably are ahead of the White Sox in terms of development, but no, now they just got to start turning it around. But certainly, like I said, I will give them the benefit of the doubt that the starters did not see too much ice time this preseason.
Here's my favorite White Sox story. It was up in the booth. They were talking about the last game and said one of the cool things they've learned was the there's a bunch of the guys that are going to be living together through the winter.
In Nashville, right?
In Nashville. Yeah. They've got a place in Nashville, and they're going to practice every day. They're going to go to the gym together.
And this wasn't a thing that the White Sox organization put together. This was the players on their own because they enjoy that they feel they're on the brink of something.
Something big.
And they want to have it.
I love that idea that they're going to be living together and baseball is going to be their number one concern.
And this is a concept that is not new to pro sports. This has happened with other teams and, you know, in years past. So this is definitely not new, but it's definitely something that, does team building. If it's not guys living together during the off season and, you know, getting to know each other better, working out together, it's also guys getting together on their downtime, working out together, you know, doing drills together, just, you know, kind of like, you know, building that chemistry, which is all important. And as we had talked about during the course of the season, you could tell that this team was starting to gel together. We saw that, you know, even though the win-loss record didn't show it, but the little improvements that they made
were good.
That, you know, we saw the improved pitching. We saw the improved offense. We saw, you know, how they were, you know, taking a more fundamental approach to baseball instead of just always looking for the big play, always swinging for the fences, always looking for that highlight reel. They were trying to do all the little things correctly. So this is, again, just another step in that direction of trying to bring this team full of young guys who, you know, most of which are still fresh out of AAA. You know, they're still kind of, you know, learning the big leagues. They're still, you know, they're still new to all this. So if you have anything that can be done, you know, to bring these players, you know, closer together and to kind of get on the same page so that way, you know, you can improve, you know, next season, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. Thank you very much, Gabe. Gabe in the newsroom. He's going to put his news hat on now. And that's Sports Between the Sheets for this week.
Can we talk about something a little different? Let's talk about something fun. Let's talk about the opening of the Lion King musical here in Chicago.
Yes, you were there.
Yep, I was there Friday night for press night, opening night, whatever you want to call it. And it did not disappoint. In fact, it did quite the opposite. It exceeded my expectations.
Really? Where was it at?
This was at the Cadillac Palace Theater.
Great theater.
I forgot what street that was. In the Loop somewhere.
Had you seen the movie?
I mean, I've seen the movie.
Okay.
I've seen it dozens and dozens of times since I was a baby.
You didn't have to stick that in there. Since we were there for opening night of the movie originally. Yeah. But
sorry.
It's okay. So going into it, you were thinking, okay, people dressed up in lion costumes is going to be really weird. And it turned out to work. Is that how you felt?
Yeah. No, it worked perfectly. And the way they did it with the costumes and everything, it was gorgeous and stunning. And it's no wonder this musical won 6 Tony Awards, and with one of them being for Best Costume Design. The choreography was pretty fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
So it sounds like you don't have to suspend a lot of belief. It sounds like you're sucked into it pretty quickly.
100%. And for fans of the movie, there's a lot of stuff in there. There's even some fourth wall breaks that kind of call out the movie specifically, which is hilarious. But there are some things where clearly it only works for the cartoon that they adapt into a stage setting and works beautifully. Like the sequence, I Just Can't Wait to Be King. Very psychedelic in the original cartoon. And in this, they keep some of that psychedelic, that imagery. Very, very wacky colors, and I don't want to give too much away. You got to go see it.
Yeah. I'm interested now. I got to be honest. I was kind of like, nah, this is not on my radar. But
this needs to be on your radar. If you are a fan of musicals in Chicago and you're a Disney nerd, must see for every Disney / musical nerd.
What was it that Christine went to see when...
She went to see Beauty and the Beast at Cadillac.
Yeah.
She went alone because we were getting ready for work and the boys were not interested. And she said, well, all right, you can drive me there and drop me off. And then she sent some texts and said, I am so happy I did this. It was just delightful.
Acoustics good in the Cadillac Palace Theater?
The acoustics were good. The only small little issue was some of the dialogue, like just the actual talking, was a little hard to hear.
Okay.
I felt like the actual speakers and the acoustics were geared specifically for the music, and I felt myself just straining a little bit just trying to hear the actual dialogue. Fortunately, I know the movie back in front, so if you know it, you're not going to really lose any steam trying to listen to them talking. But there are definitely some moments where I thought, wait, what did he say?
Yeah. Well, speaking of movies, you also saw a movie that you're pretty high on, too. This is the new DiCaprio movie.
Yes, new Leonardo DiCaprio, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. The movie's called One Battle After Another.
We've seen some of the previews, and we're going back and forth on it.
Yeah.
But you loved it?
I loved it, and it's one of those movies where you ever walk into a movie that's, you know, 2.5-3 hours long, and you just think, when is this over?
Yeah, you're looking at your watch a lot.
And let me see here what the runtime is. The runtime of this movie is 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Ooh.
And not once during this whole movie did I look at my watch or think, is this over yet? Because every moment there was something happening, and I wanted to know what's happening next. Oh my gosh, there was suspense in certain parts of the movie.
Okay, what genre is the movie? Because I couldn't get that from the previews.
It's there's a lot of action.
It's not thriller. It's not a rom-com.
No, definitely not. It's a bit of a political thriller.
Okay.
There's some quirky comical moments in there that are classic for Paul Thomas Anderson movies.
Is it set in the present day?
I don't remember that part. It feels almost in like a dystopian near future.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Wow. And DiCaprio is good?
He was very good. Normally he plays these very precise characters who really know what they're doing.
Right.
But his character's hilarious because he's kind of goofy, kind of aloof throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
But it's also the whole story from beginning to end, there's a bit of heart in there.
Oh, wow.
And I don't want to give too much away. Go see it. Go see Lion King. Go see One Battle After Another. You'll love them both.
DiCaprio will always be Howard Hughes in my book.
Yeah.
That is a movie that if it is on, I've got to stop. I don't care where it is in the movie. Yep. I have to watch it because he's wonderful.
Have you ever seen The Aviator?
Yes, love that movie.
Oh, he's so good.
He just...
Every bit of that movie. I mean, it's beautiful to look at.
Even though I know what's going to happen, like you, anytime it's on, I'm there.
Yeah, absolutely. We just finished, we're not finished. We thought Friday night was the final episode of it. But if you've not seen The Rainmaker, if you're familiar with the movie with Matt Damon from a couple of years ago, like 20, the series that we've been watching
is wonderful.
And we thought Friday night was the final episode. There's actually two more episodes. It's 10 episodes.
It's a two-part finale.
Yeah. If you like good crime dramas, oh my. And come to find out, if you've been watching it, surprise, surprise, they do a wonderful job of making you think that you're watching South Carolina when, in fact, it's Dublin, Ireland. And it is beautiful.
But again, it's a case of Brits and Australians do the best job of American accents.
Yes.
You can't tell. It's seamless.
I think half of the actors in this show are, in fact, from Great Britain.
I think
so. Or New Zealand or something. But when they speak, they're from South Carolina.
It's a wonderful series.
It is. It's very, very good.
We were talking earlier about some anniversaries, Janis Joplin passing, and there's one other thing that happened, not on this date, but this within the past day or so. October 3rd, 1967. Do you have any idea?
Is Chicago history?
Yep.
Yeah.
Riverview closed.
Yep.
That was a huge, huge deal.
And when I came across that little factoid in the almanac, I realized, and this is, you have to think about this, because I realized that the closing of Riverview is my first recollection of kind of mourning the loss of something other than people in my world.
Interesting.
Yeah. And shortly, here's where my mind went. Shortly after that, the stained glass windows in my church were stolen. And I remember being just absolutely despondent. So those are the two things in my life that I remember. Because up until that point, pets, friends, and family, they move away, they die, I get blue. Riverview closed, I was absolutely distraught. And the next year, the windows in our church were stolen, and I was just beside myself. I thought, how could anybody do that? Was I maturing, or was I becoming more emotional, or were those just really important moments in my life?
Julian, Riverview doesn't mean anything to you, does it?
It does not.
It was a wonderful amusement park at Belmont and Western.
Yep.
And it was a, for an inner city amusement park, it was a big honking amusement park.
And it had a vibe about it. It had a seediness about it that made it really cool.
Yeah.
Remember that big Aladdin's head that you rode into Aladdin's castle, and I was like, okay, am I going to come out the other side? And then my recollection was being much younger, and my dad got on the parachute, which you got in a seat, Julian, like you're in a swing, and it whisks you up in the air, and it was dark, and my dad is gone into the darkness, and suddenly his shoe flops down on the ground. And I thought, he's gone. He's gone. And then, whoom, he comes back down again.
Were you traumatized?
I was traumatized by that, yes. I literally thought they'd just taken him away. And I was holding onto his shoe. And he gets off. Where's my damn shoe?
And was it the rotor? This thing where you got in this, it was a huge circular thing. You got in it. And it starts rotating around and around and around, and pretty soon the floor falls out.
Yes.
Ooh.
And centrifugal force is keeping you against the wall.
Unless you happen to be a 7-year-old boy. I was on with my cousin, round and round and round, and when the floor dropped out, he dropped, but his pants stayed up high.
Ow!
Yeah. He was wailing.
You will probably find there were commercials done by Two-Ton Baker for the Bobs.
The Bobs, yes.
That was one of the first big deal roller coasters in the Chicago area.
And they just wiped that place out, like overnight. Nobody,
in
my recollection, nobody went in and said, I'm going to keep the cars from the Bobs. Or
see,
I'm going to keep the big Aladdin's
some of
head.
Them did, in fact, go to some other...
Well, you know what? There's a guy that has a great Facebook page all about Riverview. We should track him down and talk about it, because I know Cookie the Clown started there.
Yeah.
Bozo made a number of appearances there. It was very kid-centric, but there was that seediness to it that made it... I mean, Great America couldn't...
And they had the motorcycle that you had to get your picture taken by the motorcycle.
Yes. In fact, I got that great picture of my mom and dad when we first came to Chicago, and... my dad was so cool looking, because he looked like he was really on a big old Harley. So that was 67.
Before we lose time, we wanted to say thank you to Gwen. Do you think Gwen would be listening right now?
I told her we were going to be on, and this was after we had a 55-minute conversation on the phone. If you've listened for some time, you know we had talked about being out of town, being in Florida, starting next weekend, and we were going to be gone for 5 weeks, and we have changed our plans and decided that we're going to be going after the first of the year. So instead of doing that online, I called, and I got Gwen from Phoenix on Southwest Airlines. They should absolutely clone her. I always had wonderful experiences when I've called the Southwest people, but she was far and away the best person I'd ever talked to.
You got off the phone and said you were talking with your new best friend.
Yeah. Because I said, well, now that I have you on the phone, maybe you could talk to me a little bit about the new seating changes that are going to affect. Because our flight was booked for January 26th. On the 27th, the new assigned seating policy goes in. Because I said, do I have to choose seats? Well, how does that work? She goes, no, you don't. Because it starts on the 27th. But our return trip, I did have to choose seats. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what I learned. The ticket that we were turning in, canceling, to repurchase was what they considered a basic fare because right. It was a very low fare. It was only $115 for mm-hmm. each one of us, which was crazy cheap. She said, when you're going from a basic fare, you cannot get another basic fare when you rebook. She said, you have to go up to choice. So I said, well, that's interesting. She said, them's the rules.
But choice gives you more bells and whistles.
Yes. For example, if you have to cancel that choice fare, you have a year to use that monies that have gone into your account. If you have a basic, you have 6 months. So she said, that's a big difference. You need to know that in case, you know, you're dealing with maybe family members, they're not the best of health, and you're thinking we might have to change this. You need to know that you have some limitations. So sometimes it's worth it to bump up to choice or preferred versus basic. The basic fares are crazy cheap, but you don't get to choose your seat. Basically, you're taking what's left. So our return flight, she said, you need to choose your seats. You want center and aisle, blah, blah, blah. I picked what we wanted. She said, you're going to start right behind the exit row. Mm-hmm. That's number 16. And I said, well, why do we have to go back that far? Well, because the one in the front are the wheelchair accessible and preferred. And they pay a whole lot more to sit up there. And I don't know if those seats are going to be bigger because they've talked about more leg room.
Yeah, in fact, all of the ads that I've seen for Southwest are showing more leg room.
Yeah. So she said, you need to ask all of those questions. But I did a little interview with her and asked her a ton of questions. You saw I had a page of notes that I took because she was so helpful and partly personal. She took care of something that I have fussed with for literally 4 years.
Yep.
My dad passed away in August of 21. In 19, we had purchased tickets to go to Florida. When COVID hit, we returned our tickets. And in his case, we didn't because he kept saying, well, maybe I'll be able to use them down the road. Well, when he passed away, those tickets became funds in his account.
Yeah.
For 4 years, I've tried to, because we paid for the tickets, I tried to get those funds reimbursed to us. I got so many crazy song and dance routines.
And a lot of people who at the time appeared to be very helpful.
Send death certificates, get a case number, do this and that. And Gwen said, I don't know why this has to be so difficult. Your dad has passed away. The money is there. I'm just going to put it in your account. Really? Just like that? Wow. 4 years. Every single time I would make a reservation, I would say, is there any way I could use the funds? Nope. You have to do this. You have to go there. You have to write to this person. You have to... Oh, my gosh. So, kudos. It was wonderful.
And also, to be fair, and we'll emphasize this has nothing to do with being in radio because Gwen knew nothing about that until everything was done. Johnny is brilliant at schmoozing. When you call someone and you're dealing with a difficult situation, a little schmooze goes a long way because who knows what kind of a day they're having.
Well, in fact, she said, I'm so sorry you didn't ask me this at the outset because we would have just taken care of the difference of your January flights with the money that's been put in there. And I said, that's okay. We're going to be flying some more, so not a big deal. I'm just happy to have finally tied that up after 4 years.
Oops.
I know. I heard
the lights are starting to flicker.
Yeah. A listener said, is that the Zamboni I hear?
I think we're hearing the Zamboni in the background. And
he's down the hall.
I think he is down the hall.
I see the flashing lights.
There he is. Yep, it's big plug Bob on his Zamboni
again. It's hard
to
say for the last few minutes of the show.
Yeah, I have run out of all the good words. So if you would like to be our last caller, 312-981-7200. That number again is
312-981-7200. As long as you have not been a winner on any of the shows on WGN Radio in the last 2 months or 60 days, whichever comes first. you will get a prize or two. Who knows? If you are our last caller, if you're chosen as our last caller for this evening, I like to say you're going to be the cherry on top of a wonderful five-hour show.
And you don't have to have any pithy comments this week. If you can just sit up and make a fist and, get to the phone.
Hold your phone.
You're good.
Yes. And call 312-981-7200. You don't have to talk about baseball. You don't have to talk about anything serious. Just, you know, give us a shout. And as I say, you will be the way we walk out of here tonight. You will leave us.
You're going to set the tone for the way we will walk out.
Yes.
So you don't want us frowning as we're driving home. You want us to be in a good mood.
As hungry as we are, I don't think anything could ruin our mood. We're like, I can't wait to get home. I'm so hungry. And it's happened in the last half hour, too. So if you want to talk about food, that's fine, too.
Yeah. Go for it.
So, okay. This time now for our last caller. We got a bunch of calls on the line. I am choosing 5 is my lucky number. Did you know that? I was born on the 5th. So
that would be Tim.
Okay,
oh, well,
Tim.
Well, sign in, please.
Hi, Tim.
Hello, guys. How are you doing? I was just up tonight and listening to GN, and I thought, my gosh, I should try calling in for the last caller tonight.
Do we know
this voice sounds familiar.
Do you know me? Yeah, a little bit. You know my son better than me. I'm Neil Soroka's dad.
Of course. Good heavens. The WGN kid, Neil Soroka.
That's how he started off, but he went on to be the cyberspace czar for the Obama administration, and he's still doing all kinds of terrific things.
He's a grown man. He's a daddy now.
No.
I used to bring him down there and sit in the conference room while he was on with you and eat on Saturday evenings.
Yes. That would have been on Wednesday nights, but you guys were so wonderful because he was just a teenager when we adopted him on the show because he knew all about Apple products, and you guys were so great on New Year's Eve to make it possible for him to come to the station as a teenager and spend the night with us on the air.
And we've talked about it before. I will never forget the night that we first heard about texting. He was at some Apple conference and he said, I'm able to send a message to this person across the room. And we said, why don't you just want to go across the room and talk to him? Oh, because this is
so
texting
exciting.
And it's so cool.
Yes.
Welcome to 2025.
Huh? Yeah. You should be very proud of him because we're just tickled to see all the good things that he does.
Oh, yeah. So I'm on my way to Czech Republic to visit his sister and my two grandchildren there.
They live in the Czech Republic now?
Yeah, they moved from London now to the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
And then we come back for 4 days, and then we head up to Michigan to go visit with Neil. So.
Well, did work take them to the Czech Republic?
No, my daughter actually married a Czech man. She went over there to teach English.
Oh.
She ended up, in fact, her anniversary, 11 years, was just the other day.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So they have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, which I'm happy to go see. And Susan has to stay here because she has things to do. And then we'll be back and see Neil. Neil is still, he's a city councilman up in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. What else is, and he still works for the Kellogg Foundation.
And not too many years ago, he still had the license plate at WGN Kid.
Yeah, does he still have that license plate?
It's hanging up, I think, in his office.
Good. Because that's what we called him. And he had a wonderful fan base because thanks to him, we got the Apple fans listening.
Well, we've told the story before, but I'll make it really quick. Johnny's mom got an iMac. It was the first iMac that she had. There was a problem with it. We told Neil. Neil called and talked to...
He talked to somebody at Steve Jobs' office. And they called us and left a message on our machine and said, you need to take it to this Best Buy. They're going to be waiting for you with a new one.
I mean, the people the people at Apple knew and respected Neil, who at that time would have been,
16.
What, maybe 16? Yeah.
Yeah.
If that, he bought one and... He bought an iBook or an iMac back then, and he got it home, and
it started to heat up, and it finally fried up like a day later. And he was so irritated, he called up out there, and he demanded to speak with Steve Jobs. Of course, he never did. But the next day, Steve Jobs' assistant called him back and said, Mr. Jobs said, you send that back, we're sending you a new one.
So he kept that number. That's how he got through to them for my mother. My mom was so impressed. That is so funny. Gosh.
So we have a long history with you guys. It's
nice we sure do. Tomorrow. Yeah, we all grew up together on the radio, right?
Oh, yes.
And you are a voracious reader. What are you reading these days?
Actually, I'm taking a course at the Newberry Library online about Franz Kafka.
Oh.
And we meet on Tuesday evenings. It'll be fun because I'll be in Prague next Tuesday. And I will take my course at 2 in the morning there. When it's, 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the afternoon here.
Well, that's
right from Prague.
That's cool.
How cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious because we're kind of overwhelmed with stuff and we're trying to do a little bit of decluttering, even though much of the stuff is very precious to us. Do you keep all the books that you read?
Oh, we really shouldn't discuss that. My wife might hear. Yes.
That's my answer.
Yes. Hi, Susan.
Yes. I think every room in the house is filled with shelves. Yeah. My daughter just sent me a picture of her kid's bedroom in the Czech Republic where she said, Dad, you really have to stop sending books.
Oh.
And there are like 2 bookcases already totally full.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're like
goodness.
5 and 3. But they have 3 nationalities.
Yeah.
They're British citizens, U.S. citizens, and Czech citizens, and... And they are voracious readers at their age.
That's very cool. Well, have a wonderful, safe trip and just enjoy yourself. Soak it all up. And when you talk to our WGN kid, tell him we miss him, we love him, and he should stop by and do our show some
Absolutely.
Night. If he comes out here once a year, he spends most of his time in Michigan, but it's so great to hear from you guys.
Oh, well, thank you, Tim.
Be well.
I'm glad you were listening in tonight. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hold on for a second, Tim, and... Julian will talk to you off the air. You know, we go back. We had no idea it was going to be Tim on the line, but that's wonderful. Yeah, that's why the first call dropped off. That was so
they made
cool.
it possible, yes.
Boy, this has been a fast
couple
5
quick
hours.
Things. Yeah. Next week, Patrick will be on. We will once again rehash the business of Windows 10 going into 11 because the 15th of October is the deadline.
Yep. And if you want to find out how to deal with that, go to our blog. That's stephenjohnny.wordpress.com and scroll down and you will find Patrick Crispin's show notes for the last time that he was on with us. And you will find a lengthy description of what to do to deal with Windows 10.
Right. But it will be worth repeating it because a lot of people said, oh, I didn't know I had to do that. So he will explain it all to you again next Saturday night. And, of course, we got some surprises coming up. So I was just looking at the list. I've already looked at shows until Christmas. We're booking them up, filling them up.
And we'll have another scary story next week,
too. We will, yeah.
And who knows what else. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Thanks to Julian and Bob and Ron and Gabe
and all the ships at sea.
Exactly.
And go Cubs. Okay. Yeah.
Stay safe.